This week on the Jock and Nerd Podcast, we review the 1984 classic Ghostbusters, plus trailer reactions for The Crow, Rebel Moon Part 2, and Godzilla X Kong. Venom 3 gets an official title, the Batman sequel gets hit with a massive delay, and more, all in this edition of the Jock and Nerd Weekly for Monday, March 18th, 2024.
This is Jason Hawes, and you're listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. I've seen a lot of things in my life, but nothing freaks me out like antique porcelain dolls. No, even worse, puppets. Puppets come into life. But that's impossible, right? Right, guys?
My spider shits are tingling.
Check. Check one. All right. This is for all you fans out there. Let's give it up.
Hey, 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 listener, what's up? Welcome, welcome to the Jock and Nerd Podcast, where we give you comic book and superhero TV and movie news, reviews, and whatever we choose.
Jock and Nerd!
My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the Jock.
He's the Nerd. We'll peep you next time.
No, we're going to stay right here because he's back joining us also. He came, he saw, he kicked its ass. He's also very slimy. It's Rug Boy.
What's up, Rugs? I feel funky.
You feel funky, Rugs? How you feeling? Did you enjoy your week off?
Sure. You make it sound like it's a week off. It's just one day, Imran.
It was. I gave you.
We
a
only
whole...
record the podcast in like a couple of hours.
Give you a whole week off without pay. I hope you made good use of your time.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I got my rest. I feel nice. I feel relaxed. All the stresses of doing a show with Imran are now dissipated.
That's fantastic. And it's been years of stress, Anthony and Rugboy. And I'm going to mention this week, as of this Saturday, March 23rd, 2024, it will be our 9th anniversary.
Oh, shit. Wow.
We will have completed 9 years of podcasting on the Jock and Nerd Podcast.
Holy crap.
I'm not going to make a big deal about it. It's just been 9 years of weekly bullshit. Hope the listener has enjoyed. How does that feel? Comment? 9 years.
Wow, getting old.
Turn nine. Jeez. The kids, third grade? What is that?
Yeah, that's like, I don't even know what that is anymore.
Third grade,
he doesn't have pubes yet.
No, he definitely doesn't have pubes, but he's old enough now to be kind of a shit.
Yes. Start getting an attitude.
He's starting to, I wouldn't say he fully dislikes his parents, us, but he is wondering why he's got three dads.
Yeah. he's constantly on Fortnite all the time for some reason.
He's like, you guys don't have to walk me to school anymore. You don't have to just drop me off a block away. It's fine. I'm embarrassed.
Why do I have three dads?
I think it's also fair to say the world was like a really different place 9 years ago.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was different. It was more fun. And even though
we like the CW shows.
Right? It was 2015. The Daredevil Netflix show was popping. The CW shows were still good.
Comic book stores were still open.
Yes, there were more comic book stores. Marvel.
What was the Marvel movie that was out there?
I think Age of Ultron.
Oh, okay.
Was the first MCU movie we reviewed as it came out. That's
we were still in good Marvel territory. This is the beginning of the Infinity Saga.
Yeah.
2015, Age of Ultron, and then we talked about Ant-Man later that year.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And it doesn't seem like that, but it's like it was a different world. It was a different time.
Let me just look at what's the 2015's best box office?
Oh, highest box office 2015. All right,
domestic gross. Box office. We'll do a top 10 real quick.
Okay.
When we first started.
Yeah.
The number one movie. Any guesses that year with the number one movie?
I can't even. Oh, I don't remember.
Domestically, not worldwide.
Domestically, number one. Was it Winter Soldier? No.
No. Rugs, anything?
Nope.
Jurassic World.
Oh my God. That's right. The first Jurassic World.
The second movie was The Force Awakens.
That thing was huge. Remember, it almost
that was bigger internationally. Yeah. Here it was not bigger domestically. Third, Avengers: Age of Ultron.
Okay.
Fourth, Inside Out.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Fifth, Furious 7.
Oh, shit.
Six, American Sniper. Seven, Minions.
Okay.
Eight, The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2. Nine, The Martian.
Oh, that's a fantastic movie.
And then 10 was Cinderella.
Yeah, so Age of Ultron. What was the top three again? Force Age Awakens, of Ultron, that's right.
Force Awakens and Jurassic World.
Jurassic World. Wow. Wow. And now we're
a lot of franchise movies, yeah. But then some randoms. You know, you got your American Sniper and your Martian.
And we've had like three Jurassic movies, three Star Wars sequels,
yeah,
and more.
It was still before the second movie. What was it called? The Last Jedi? Before the whole entire schism happened.
No,
Star Wars was still, at this point, Star Wars was riding real high.
Yeah, it was huge because it was returning. Remember?
Everyone kind of liked Force Awakens. They felt like it was a nice nostalgia throwback, even though some Star Wars fans secretly thought it was just a copy of the other films, but, you know.
It was, yeah.
But it didn't ruffle any feathers.
Yeah. It was safe, it was a tribute, and it was a lot of retread. I'll tell you where the schism was, Ruggs. It was the next year. I remember, I still think this to this day. Everything changed once Batman versus Superman came out. Then there was like a big divide, and this is how we end up with the fandom we have today, I feel. It started there.
That could be right. Where people started getting real pissed.
Yeah, there was two sides. And now Zack Snyder has like a cult following him, and we'll talk about him
so
later.
So Joss Whedon was a thing back then, and not anymore.
Yeah,
yeah, he was still a thing.
He's erased from history now. He never existed.
Another movie that was out back then, 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh, our lovely Madame Web herself.
A couple other ones just for fun. Yeah. 50 Shades of Grey was 17th. Straight Out of Compton, 19.
Oh, that's a fantastic movie.
21 was Mad Max Fury Road. Was that year?
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. And then Imran's favorite movie, 23, Kingsman, The Secret Service.
Oh, boo.
28 was Creed.
Oh, and then Creed came out. What a year.
A lot of different movies that year.
Yeah, now it's 2024.
Magic Mike was out that year.
My favorite.
Oh, Fanforstic was out that year.
Oh, Fanforstic.
52nd.
That's right.
Another favorite of mine.
That's right. We did like two episodes on that fucking movie. Once when we reviewed it, and then we did like a What the Fuck Happened, right? You know.
29 years ago.
It's crazy.
That's what it was like.
It's all a blur. I don't remember doing any of the shows in the last 9 years. I barely.
Yeah, you sounded like you were on codeine doing the shows.
The very first one. And you can go back and listen to all of them. There's 9 years, over 500 plus episodes in the feed. And if you listen to that first episode, we're like real sleepy, and I took some Valium. It's very strange. And then I don't know what happened. Now
I think that you were going for the like
the NPR podcast.
Yes,
vibe?
Like yeah. I was gonna try and say that too.
I knew that.
I couldn't remember the acronym.
What episode did Ruggs debut?
It was 13. Episode 13.
Lucky number 13, yeah.
Yes, which is it's a fun, chaotic.
The show's been cursed ever since.
Yes, and it's been on.
So that's like, you guys were doing it for like a couple of months, 3 or 4 months?
Yeah. It just kept going. We've only missed like 4 weeks, I think, total out of the last 5 years. So,
wow.
That's all to say. If you're a new listener, welcome, subscribe. We're always here for you, hanging out every week. Here's to the next 9 years. I don't know. Oh my God.
I'll drink to that.
Yes, drink to that. Let's get to some news here.
Oh my hour.
And Nerd Podcast.
Like, you've already drinking to that, Rex. Okay, we got a couple of trailers I want to discuss. We talked 2 weeks ago about the first look at this Crow remake with some photos. And now we have the official trailer. Ooh, giving us a real good look at this movie with Bill Skarsgård and FKA Twigs. Anthony, do you know FKA Twigs? Is this like a...
I've heard her a little bit here and there.
Do the kids know her? Is that...
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
She's been passed around a lot.
That's her name. No, I'm just kidding. Capital FKA Twigs, lowercase. It's very interesting. Anyways, directed by Rupert Sanders, based on James O'Barr's The Crow. Anthony, I'm going to start with you because you are more of the casual Crow fan. I know Ruggs and I will have
Yeah, you guys can definitely
some thoughts. But by the looks of this trailer, the soundtrack, the style, what'd you like? What sticks out? How do you think this looks?
Like, not a, you know, not a big Crow fan. Sure. I mean, this looks like a, you know, revenge, you know, supernatural revenge movie. Gothic looking, violent, bloody.
Oh yeah.
For me, I don't have a strong opinion on this, but here's what I think. If this wasn't called The Crow, I think it would be fine. But I think the fact that it's called The Crow and it has so much to live up to and of its time, I think it's kind of destined to fail. even though to me it looks all right, whatever.
Yeah.
But I'm more curious what the real Crow fans had to think. So I'll back off and I'll hear what you guys got to say.
Yeah, Rugs, how'd this hit you? I'm torn on this one. Watched it a couple of times. And the first time I watched it, I felt like you, Anthony. I was like, all right, this looks all right. It's violent. They're turning it into John Wick. It's a little sexier. I did appreciate it. Looks like you're going to get more about their relationship before the double murder happens, which really you didn't really know much about the relationship in the original. But I love the original. It's not a great movie, but it's a great movie for its time, for the aesthetic, the goth look. This has very modern music. I do like the thing where you can take a lot of bullets and like regenerate, but it also seems very generic. Like maybe it shouldn't have been The Crow. It looks like a direct to streaming thing. And the violence is great. They're showing headshots and body shots, but it also looks very fake in the trailer, which kind of just takes me out of it. So yeah, I don't know about this. I don't know. I was digging it first and then I watched it a couple more times. So I'm like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to be any good. Rugs.
Okay, so let's talk about a couple of things. So what Anthony said is kind of right on the money. The fact that it's called The Crow, it kind of muddies the water a little bit. Now, the fact that it's Eric Draven makes it even worse.
Yeah, this is Eric Draven.
Because Crow. Now, The Crow has been, this is not the first sequel to The Crow. They've made about three other ones.
Yeah, this isn't even a sequel, though. This is a reboot, a remake.
Yes, but they made three other Crows.
Yeah, I need to watch
that. Those were not Eric Draven.
Right.
And they kind of like, one was more like supernatural and more like even more horror oriented, right?
Yeah.
That was called City of Angels. Then they made a Crow with some other guy that he didn't have long hair. He was like in an ex-con uniform and he was also not Eric Draven. And then they made one with fucking
Eddie Furlong,
yes. Wicked Prayer,
John Connor,
and there was a lot of famous people in that movie, but it was so terrible, it was really really bad. That one also was not Eric Draven. So they've had multiple Crows that were not Eric Draven, were not gothic, were not in, and they didn't do well.
Right.
So I think that the winning combination is that you do the Eric Draven story and you do it to the comic book and you do it to the style that it was in the 80s goth stuff. And you kind of get that Tim Burton-y shit in there too.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. They used Eric Draven, but they kind of did what they did in the other Crow movies that were not as successful. So they made the Crow not that style.
Yeah.
And then now they're using Eric Draven, which makes it even more like you could at least go, okay, well, that's not Eric Draven. That's right. This is a different Crow.
Right. And that would have been all right too. That would have probably been better.
So I think that they made a lot of bad choices. But look, I'll say the guy playing the Crow, Skarsgård.
Bill Skarsgård, yes.
He would have been great in the makeup and everything. He's got the perfect build for it. He's got the perfect facial structure. He would look great. He's been a clown before.
Right.
Like, he would be perfect to do the Crow. It's not, and the guy who's directing the movie, he's talented. He's done other big box office things. He did like the Snow White and the Huntsman and shit. So I hope that I'm right about that.
Yeah, he did Snow White and the Huntsman. He did the Ghost in the Shell live action.
Right. So, but he's now a pariah because after Ghost in the Shell and this, he's done. Like, that's it. He's over. Now, the thing is this movie might be, like, I don't think that he can't do a good movie. He clearly is talented enough to make, like, decent decent fare. So I think it's going to be well done. I just think that it's misguided. And if this wasn't called The Crow, if this wasn't Eric Draven, I think we could just watch it without any kind of tinge of wanting to hate it. Right? We could like watch it open-mindedly and not try and associate it with The Crow. But the fact that it is, this is what they gave us after all these years of development. And they decided to veer off into this way. And the music's like rap music. And
yeah, it's like very current, you know, the hip hop. Yeah, this movie's been development hell for years. Yeah, at the end is like whatever. I don't know who that is. It's not hip hop. What would you call it? That's not.
I don't know. I mean, it's like I don't even know what you would call it. I don't know what kind of music that. I wouldn't have said it was rap, but it's,
no. What the hell is that music then these days?
Well, it sounds like regular pop music. It doesn't sound like.
Okay.
It doesn't sound eerie or anything like that.
Yeah,
it does. I guess that there is a rap tinge at the end.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah, I guess it is rap. That, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what that was, to be honest with you. You made me question it after listening. I just
thought that's today's hip hop is what it sounds like.
I know I don't know what rap is anymore. But
yeah,
but I know I'm old and stupid, but so, I'm like curious though,
what specifically is it getting wrong? The look, obviously, no one liked how he looks, right?
He looks terrible. He's doing the Juggalo Joker thing. He
looks like
sucks.
The Joker. I mean,
the fact that it's Eric Draven is not that character. Eric Draven is a completely. The whole book is the book is like got this whole aesthetic that
he was a musician,
dark and yeah.
But there was spiritual.
He was a guy with a guitar, like playing like freaking you know, combat boots.
He was guitar playing musician, and there was a little supernatural elements in the book, which looks like they're incorporating the guy Danny Houston is the bad guy, and he's like whispering things in people's ears or whatever. I mean, this got to be rated R. It doesn't have a rating yet. It's so fucking.
Oh, it's definitely rated R.
Right, so fucking violent.
I don't think that like I don't think it's I just think it's number one. It's bad to use Eric Draven when other movies. Have gone. You don't need to use the Eric Draven story. Then don't use him. Like don't burn that. It's like when Batman versus Superman used the Dark Knight fight
right
in it for no apparent reason. Yeah. They burned it for no reason. Like the movie didn't need to have that the armor and all that other stuff. They didn't need to do that, and they kind of now they burned that and they can never do it now. So it's just funny that they just burnt Eric Draven and when they didn't need to use his character or. And they didn't use his aesthetic. They used nothing from Eric Draven, but they used the story.
Well, yeah, the basic setup of the girlfriend double murdered. He's got to get revenge.
But that's not even how it happens in the comic book. In the comic book, they're driving. They just got engaged.
Right.
And they're like out on a drive and the car breaks down. And then a gang pulls up behind them and then fucking shoots Eric in the head. And while he's like bleeding out, he's seeing them like gang rape his girlfriend.
Yeah.
And then like a year later, he wakes up and
The first movie changed that also.
They did it about some kind of real estate deal going wrong.
Yeah.
Which is like, okay. And then they build up the bad guy to be this like mystical fucking dude and all that shit. And they made him have a weakness with the crow being able to get hurt. So they built that all that Proyas built all that into The Crow.
This will be in theaters this summer, June 7th. And I don't know, like, I'll have to see. I don't know if we're going to watch it. I don't know if it's going to do very well.
But we're going to have to watch it.
We're going to have to watch it, I guess.
I feel like it's going to be an okay action film, but it's going to be a shitty crow film.
A shitty crow film, right. Like, it could have just been something else or used a different crow instead.
Do you think it's missing, like, the gothic aesthetic?
I think it's missing the makeup, the gothic aesthetic. I think the tattoos and stuff are like a little bit reminiscent of Juggalo Joker.
Well, they're trying to update it, right? As if it's happening now. So that's the treatment they've done is to use.
Yeah, but there's also other, like, that's the problem. Like, everybody thinks that that's the only way that a pop artist can look now because Post Malone.
Right. Oh, maybe he is a musician.
Now he's the archetype. Yeah. And I'm like, why are they trying to push that? That's so like blasé now.
Yeah.
Like, try and do something. We see it all the time. Let's see something different, you know, but I don't know. That's what's unique about The Crow is it's different. This isn't different. This is like, you know, it's just weird. Like if Who's the guy who used to Machine Gun Kelly became the Crow.
It is. It reminds me.
That is kind of a buff Machine Gun Kelly.
Yes, it's MGK, which is why it feels like a little generic-y overall. Like stuff
it's
we've
lame.
Seen.
It's
already.
Not cool. Like the like Machine Gun Kelly. I'm sorry, he's not cool. Like he could fuck Megan Fox all he wants. He's still not cool to me. He's lame. He's a joke.
Said in the other a few weeks ago, he was based on Robert Smith and The Cure, really, right? That was the whole inspiration for the mood of the book. But there's really nothing like that now, I guess. There's no emo. Is there emo music still?
There's emo music. But there is a fucking guy. I forgot his name. Alice Dracula or something like that.
Okay,
that's checked. I can't check that out.
What the fuck?
So this video got 42,000 likes on the YouTube trailer and 53,000 dislikes. Even though I don't know how they got this number, they don't show the dislikes. In just 24 hours. So I think a lot of people aren't digging this take on The Crow. Listener, let us know what you think. Join this conversation. Join our Facebook group. It's called Jock and Nerd Nation.
Jock and Nerd.
It's an exclusive closed group just for you. You can geek out in there. There's spoiler threads. Lots of fun things. Meet fun people. Okay, next trailer. Speaking of the Zack Snyders. We all loved Rebel Moon Part 1, didn't we?
It's great.
Great movie. Yeah. Great. One of the all time movies.
It's the greatest Blade Runner Star Wars.
Can't wait till the releases the director's cut.
Oh, yes. I need a movie that I really wanted to see a 4-hour R-rated director's cut of. We're going to get that. Anyways, part two coming out April 19th, and they just put out the trailer for Rebel Moon. Part two, The Scar Giver, which I assume is her nickname, Sophia Batella's character, but. Maybe they'll explain that in the movie because it doesn't make, they never mentioned anything.
Yeah, that's never been, that was never a thing.
It was never a thing.
In the first one, I don't remember it.
No, I don't remember either. And I was like, you better fucking explain this. So this one, look, we all saw the trailer for the first movie. The trailer was kind of cool. The movie, not so much. I feel like the same thing's happening here, Anthony. What do you think? This trailer, some dope scenes, great Chris Cornell song, whatever that was. Rocking that they used, impactful editing, hard hits. There's kind of a hallway scene. But is he going to fool us twice? It looks like there's more action. He said this is a war movie. He set up everything in the first one. Now this should be just wall-to-wall action in part two, but I don't know.
Snyder always cuts a really good trailer.
Absolutely.
Whoever works with Snyder and cuts his trailers.
Yeah.
Everything he does, anything he puts in a movie is tailor-made for trailers.
Yes.
So he
you say it's trailer made.
It's trailer made. Yes.
Yeah. Music video directing type stuff. That's it's great. Works good. Here's a problem. we've seen this story plenty of times. Furthermore, the last story we saw, Rebel Moon, it was so generic and forgettable and mediocre at best that I already forgot most of what happened in that movie.
Oh boy.
So when I was watching this trailer, I went, wow, that looks cool.
Yeah.
If only you would have, you almost mind wiped me because I forgot that the other movie even existed. So I might have almost been fooled to watch this one and think, oh, this one might be good. But the problem is the last movie was just, it was a ChatGPT movie. It was.
Well, the problem is that Zack Snyder forgot what movie he was making during making the movie. Yeah. He was just like, "What? This isn't even interesting. Like, he introduces characters and forgets about them. He just assembles a team and doesn't tell you anything about those characters.
We're supposed to now invest in this team, and I don't know anything about the team because he didn't really. He just did some cool fight scenes with the team, and that was it. And then the one character that everyone thought was cool, the robot, he dropped about a quarter of the way into the movie, or maybe halfway in. And now we're seeing the robot again. Yo,
those robot scenes are fucking dope. He's battling. He's got a gun. He's fighting back. He's got antlers. That looks sick.
I know this story. I know how it plays out with Zack Snyder, and we know what we're going to get.
Fool me
You're
once.
Not going to get surprised him. He's not going to. We've given him so many chances to rise above his Snyderness.
I mean, that's why I do remember the movie, is because it was so ridiculous and how. She built the team on these different franchise, you know, ripping off IP planets. And I still think it's hilarious when they get to Jimon Hunsu and she just yells at him. And he's like, okay, I'll join. Let's go. It's so funny. Like, I can't forget that.
Go to the gladiator planet.
Yes. It's so ridiculous. But, like, watching this trailer, I'm like, same thing I felt the first one. This could be good, but I know what's going to happen. Is you can't make a movie out of just cool montages.
I need a diverse team of people, all right? We need, and it seems like we need to check every box. We need a gladiator.
That one girl.
We need someone with a sword.
The girl with the black eye makeup looks exactly like Charlize Theron from Mad Max Fury Road, like from that planet.
Right.
So, yeah, there's cool lens flare. There's cool slow-mo jumping and shooting. Great. Fantastic.
But they don't have a Wookiee.
They don't have a Wookiee, and I'm just anticipating more really bad line delivery from Sofia Boutella. Oh, there's a lightsaber battle, though. Several lightsaber battles. Yeah, I saw battles.
That. Where they're sliding down something.
Yeah, shit is exploding.
You know who did that? Ahsoka Tano in the last episode of Clone Wars.
Yes, everybody did that.
Where they're sliding and slicing each other at the same time. Yeah. That's not even new Zack Snyder.
Yeah. None of this is new, but we'll get to be disappointed again April 19th, possibly.
What's worse, the Crow reboot or this Rebel Moon? Like, I can't tell. Like, they're both so mediocre.
I think the Crow is going to be more forgettable afterward. No?
I think the Rebel Moon will be more forgettable because it's not... It is aping every franchise, but it's not a remake. I think the way the reaction is so vitriolic to... Is that even a word, vitriolic? Yeah. I don't know.
Sure.
To the Crow,
yeah,
that it's inevitable that when this movie comes out, it's going to produce a much stronger reaction than Snyder's Rebel Moon.
Yeah, you're probably right. Oh, I meant to mention.
I mean, the amount of videos that'll be made hating on this remake, they're already out there.
Yes.
Whereas Rebel Moon,
that's a good
people
point.
Like to hate on Snyder, yeah. But it's just like the latest in his like series of duds. And again, it's not copying any IP. Well, it is, but it's not.
It is,
but it's not.
But it's not at all. I think you're right, actually, Anthony. The Crow has a much bigger fan base that's a little bit hardcore
than this fucking thing
he's making up that's trying to make it a thing. Did you guys see Zack Snyder did an episode of Joe Rogan's podcast?
I saw that. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I listened to some clips.
I did listen to it. And I just, I was fine. It was very Zack Snyder-y. They got to bro out about
it. Well, he is Zack Snyder, so of course it would be Zack
Snyder. Yeah, and like it's perfect for that show, right? Him and Joe.
What were your main takeaways?
Well, they did a lot of talk about like bodybuilding and like how he's into bodybuilding. He was talking about 300 and dehydrating yourself. But the part I thought was hilarious is where he's trying to talk about the viewership numbers for Rebel Moon compared to Barbie. And his math is what, here's what he said. He goes, you think about Netflix where you push a button, Rebel Moon, say right now it's almost at 90 million views, 80 or 90 million accounts turned it on, give or take. They assume two viewers per screening, right? That's the kind of math. So you think that if the movie was in the theater as a distribution model, that's like 160 million people supposedly watching based on that math. 160 million people at $10 a ticket. He goes, what is that? I don't know, 1.6 billion. He goes, so more people probably saw Rebel Moon than saw Barbie in the theater, right? And I was like, I don't know what kind of math you're working with here, Zack Snyder.
What is the actual number that he
I don't know. I think he's just making up numbers. He's saying
90 million people times two.
Yeah.
That's 180 million?
180 million people. And then if you did 10 bucks a ticket, it'd be, what, 1.8 billion?
So if Rebel Moon was in the theaters, said it would made 1.8 billion. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
No.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's no.
The math ain't math in Zack Snyder.
I mean, that math makes sense, but it's not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Correct.
Not 180 million or 90 million people or 180 million people aren't going out and buying a ticket to Rebel Moon. They'll potentially throw it on Netflix because
it's there.
It's there. Right. Yeah. But that doesn't necessarily mean people would be down to pay for it.
Correct.
He's equating paying for Netflix and it being on Netflix to paying for the movie. And those are two different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and I also doubt 90 million people turned it on.
I doubt 90 million people watched that also.
But I don't know.
Yeah.
There's 300 million people. A lot of them are stupid kids. And 90 of them might have turned up.
Yeah, no.
That's, well, they have 200
something.
They got something
like 230 million subscribers.
Worldwide,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So he's saying basically over a third of those people decided to watch Rebel Moon.
I don't know about that. I don't think so.
How many people watch Andrew Tate? Those are the same amount of people that watch Zack Snyder movies. Yikes. I don't know. I'm just making sure.
But no, and they, yeah, it was, oh, I mean, it's
260 million subscribers.
260, yeah, they're in the world. Lead. That's all still a lot. It's very impressive.
Oh, yeah, they're
worldwide. No, the episode is pretty good, and they talked, he talked about Batman.
Talk about Batman, I saw that.
Yeah, and like how Batman should kill and stuff. And
well, I remember that part. He basically said, because the, you know, everyone hates that he made Batman kill, and his point was okay. It was just like, well, that's a scenario that just isn't actually interesting. Like, you have to, to make Batman not kill, you have to put him in situations that
where he
feasible.
Wouldn't kill. Right.
Right. Yeah. And he said it'd be more interesting to put Batman in a situation where, that was on the table. Like, for example, in Dark Knight Returns, when the criminals holding the kid at gunpoint says, "I'll kill him."
Right.
And then Batman goes, "I believe you," and kills him.
Yeah. Or like in self-defense. But if you think about all the Batman movies, I mean, he's shooting a lot of guns at bad guys. Like, there's definite kill counts in Batman 89, in Chris Nolan's Batman, in all those 90s Batman. I feel like they've killed people off screen, implied.
I think part of the issue with it wasn't necessarily the killing aspect of it, but just how nihilistic it was.
Yeah. It's more about the code and the morals and like, of the character. And,
yeah. You know, him almost seemingly enjoying killing people. Yes. And that's just not what Batman
is. It's off. Correct. He wouldn't brand a motherfucker. Like, he was like, "What the fuck? What are you doing?"
Right.
That's crazy.
Right. Right. Yeah. The branding.
Yeah. What do you think, Ruggs? Is it okay for Batman to kill in certain situations or never?
In reality, he would actually have to kill people. In fact, when they first invented Batman, he killed people all the time.
Right. And then
it's just now when the comics code and all that other stuff came about, they dialed him back to not having this code of not killing people. But in reality, like, if you were fighting people, like, people would die by accident. Like, if you hit somebody in the nose the wrong way and kill them. It's like, it's almost like, how is he going to really do his job if killing doesn't happen sometimes? But I don't think he should be setting out to kill people.
No, because then that makes him.
I think accidental manslaughter. Okay, fine, let that happen.
Lateral damage. But like, if he's setting out to kill, he's as bad as the Joker.
Yeah,
anybody,
he's not.
Right?
He should always be trying to like give people an opportunity to live.
Yeah.
Like, but if they don't if they don't give up and they keep coming at him, then he might have to, you know, do something that could kill him, probably. Like throw him off a building or something. I don't know. But like, you never, like, I don't know. Just to make this kind of statement, when you're in doing something that is very hard to control what happens to people when you hit them.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dumb way, unless you're writing a children's story where everything always happens. Everything is always a fluffy cloud you land.
Right. And there's always a lesson.
Yeah. So that's what they do. Right. But you can make Batman, just don't make him a murderer.
That's it. That's all. It's one very simple rule.
Make him a manslaughterer.
Yes, make him involuntary manslaughterer is fine. All right, wait. We'll get back to Batman in a second. We're going to get to this last trailer. It is for a movie coming out very soon, March 29th, just 10 days away, Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. We got a tickets on sale trailer. And I didn't really need to see this. I was already going to see it, and I kind of wasn't going to watch it. And I feel like they're giving away a lot. They give away a little bit more, but
too much.
This trailer, I do like how it starts with the clips of all the legendary Godzilla MonsterVerse movies so far, building up to the thing. Anthony, did you watch this? Do you think it's too much?
Of course I did.
Did you catch the little?
Of course I did.
There's a couple.
Of course I watched it. Of course. In retrospect, I think it's too much. Yeah. Did I actively seek it out? Of course I did.
Yeah.
Of course I want to see Shimo.
Yeah, you see
Shimo or whatever. I'm I'm all about seeing everything right away. I don't know why. I'm spoiling everything for myself, and I don't care. The beginning of the trailer, I don't know if you guys remember the one of the second or maybe the third Avengers Endgame trailer.
Yeah.
They did the same thing where they recapped the previous movies in black and white.
That's right. Oh,
that's
right.
What this trailer's doing, which is kind of funny.
It's great.
Fuck. Yeah, I mean, this movie, you know, it's we know what we're getting here. Oh,
absolutely. It looks fucking fun as shit.
And I'm ready for it. This is great. Still this looks, is awesome.
I'll agree.
It looks awesome.
I don't mind spoiling some of this because it still looks fun as shit. I'm still looking forward to it. You get a quick shot of Shimu until they go behind a building. And then the other, I feel like they've showed us, you know, the scene where they pop out of the cliff and they're running. They've shown different parts of that. I feel like they've shown that whole scene. Did you notice the little detail at the end of this one? Anyone?
King Kong rides Godzilla.
Oh, shit.
Oh,
yes.
Shit.
He jumps on his back.
That's been out for a while.
Oh, really? I was like, oh, shit. He just jumped on his back and grabbed on.
That's been out for a while. And if you watch international trailers, they show Shimu like chained up. The theory I have is that Scar, they aren't like buddies, Shimu and Scar. He just found a way
to use him.
Chain him up. Yeah. Mm. And use him.
Scar looks dope with this fucking spine bone whip, whatever that is. I saw in the other Chinese trailer, international trailer, where Godzilla's in the Colosseum in Rome. That was fucking pretty dope, too.
Oh, yeah. There's one where he's fighting like a giant spider.
Oh, yeah. That's right. What is that? That's a new monster, too?
Yeah.
This is like a spider crab thing. So that's like five.
It may be the one from the King of the Monsters. Yeah, remember that one?
Skyla or something? I forget.
Scylla.
That's so, like five huge kaijus and all.
There's also
the Kongs.
A scene that they released the other day that was where Godzilla and Kong are in Egypt, and Godzilla attacks Kong, and Kong's trying to stop him from attacking him.
Yeah,
like hold up, like stop, man, we got to talk.
Yeah, they're gonna have to communicate somehow. Get on the same page. Now
they're showing a lot. They're giving away the entire movie.
Yeah,
and I don't care.
How are your tickets buying experience? Were there a lot of seats open?
There were. I got my tickets at the IMAX on the Thursday.
When is it released?
March 29th. Just like 2 weeks.
I haven't bought tickets yet.
You should. How is your? Why? Are you finding it's getting full?
No. I haven't bought them yet.
Okay.
No, I feel like there's certain times like the 7 o'clock shows. They're pretty full.
They're filling up. Wow.
But the earlier shows and some of the late shows are not at all. So, I'm talking about like three seats, like wow. They get bought. Yeah. So I'm not really that I mean, it's a ways away, but,
mine was wide open.
Yeah.
So
that's scary.
I mean, I think the box office is going to be picking up a little bit because we'll talk about it. We got Ghostbusters coming out this weekend. Then it's Godzilla X Kong. Dune Part 2 has crossed 200 million domestically, almost at 500 million internationally.
What does it say here? I'm looking at the Godzilla Kong box office projections. This is from March 15th.
Yeah.
They're projecting 45 million plus in the first weekend.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That'll be good. Okay.
50 might be 50 million.
That sounds low. You know,
this movie's got to have a pretty big budget, too, I would think.
They said 112?
The low end, it'll be fourth best Godzillaverse movie.
Oh.
But they're projecting maybe a little higher. I don't know. We'll see.
I feel like that Godzilla makes a lot of his money on his merchandising.
Yeah.
Like the toy sales and shit like that. And so, like, you got to factor that in and, like, purchases of, like, the DVDs and all that other stuff. But I don't think it's going to make as much as before all the streaming stuff came out and all of these options to stay home and the cheapness of TVs. Now you can get a better TV. Like, think about it. When that 2014 TV prices were still pretty high.
Yeah.
There wasn't that many streaming options.
Yeah.
And Godzilla didn't even break, I don't think 400 something million or something. What was it? It was like 480. Or for something like that.
Which one? The first one?
Yeah, 2014. And that was when the anticipation was at an all-time high, I believe.
That one did.
And then Kong did slightly better, like 20 million better or something.
Godzilla 2014 did 200 million domestic, 324 international. 524
million. So, and then what did Godzilla versus Kong make?
Well, that's a weird one because it came out during COVID.
Yes,
and it came out on the same day.
Streaming. And
that one was considered a huge success because it did 100 million domestic, 369, almost 500 million worldwide
during COVID.
During COVID,
so this thing should do better than that, you would think. But Ruggs, to your point, they put out a report and there was a poll, and they were like, I think a third of adults prefer to just stay at home and watch something on streaming than actually go to the theater. A third of moviegoers, which is kind of a big number, and it's probably going to grow.
Godzilla 2014 domestic opening.
Yeah.
$93
million. Wow. Wow, in 2014, that's a big opening weekend.
That's pretty solid for a Godzilla film. Let's see Kong Skull Island. Let's see. Kong Skull Island domestic opening was $61
million. I think it dropped from there. I don't think anything beats that opening.
$168 domestic total, $400 international, so almost $570 worldwide.
So all
that
of these...
did better than...
Yeah.
That did better worldwide than... Godzilla.
All these are doing 300 to 500 plus at least.
Yeah.
It's somewhere in between. It's going to be at its worst 300 million. At its best, if it breaks 500, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, that'd be surprising.
Yeah. Because if Dune's been out for a while now.
Yeah.
And it just broke 500.
17 days. I mean, that's pretty fast. I mean, I think in this the way things are now, I think those numbers are good.
If Godzilla can get to, like 100 or so domestic and 400 worldwide, I think it'll be fine. I think that's...
What do you think Dune's going to clap out at, you think?
Man, I don't know. I mean, they're at 498 right now.
Yeah, it's almost worldwide. 500, and it's only been like out for like 3 weeks, right?
I think probably 600.
Okay.
I don't know.
I think
it's hard
more.
To predict. I don't. It's weird. The box office has just changed so much. I mean, we just talked about 2014.
Yes,
10 really years has. Ago.
Yeah.
People just don't go to movies as much.
With Dune, though, people are going to see it multiple times in all like different formats. They're trying to get like IMAX or 70 millimeter. So I think it has some legs it's going to have for
a while. That's a different kind of thing. It's kind of like a modern classic.
Yeah,
right?
Don't compare Dune to
Godzilla. Yeah. No, I'm just saying that's why I think Dune it's going to be more than 600.
This is a popcorn movie. This is all it is.
So, and then once reviews come out, it will be interesting to
it's
see.
It's going to get shit reviews.
Yeah. And if word of mouth is good and people say it's fun. Be exactly
let's see
need.
Rotten Tomatoes just real quick.
I don't think there's a score for it yet.
No I'm saying Godzilla Kong. It's kind of similar.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes had Godzilla versus Kong. Ooh, look at this, 76%.
All right,
fresh 91% audience score.
Yeah, see, the audience loved it.
The audience loved it, and the critics liked
it.
Long Range, here, last stat. Godzilla X New Empire, X Kong the New Empire. Opening weekend range, this is from February 29th, so it's a couple weeks ago. Opening weekend range at that time was 41 to 50 million. Domestic total was 91 to 140.
Oh, okay. 140. Yeah, no, I think it has a chance to do 50 million plus strong opening.
Hopefully it does more.
Yeah.
We'll see. You're saying the theaters are wide open, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. Right now, they put out this trailer. They're trying to get people to buy. That's still a week.
Buy two seats.
A little over a week away. Now, it wasn't like when I went to buy Dune tickets. I'll tell you that, man. That shit was fucking packed up. It was locked up. I was really surprised. Dune moved the tickets.
But did you get it the day that the Dune tickets dropped?
No, I did it later.
Yeah, so maybe in
time.
A week.
Yeah. And then Adam Wingard's talked about what his next project may or may not be. He's working on two things. Remember the Face Off reboot remake?
Oh, that's right.
And I didn't know this. He's been working on a live action Thundercats for a while.
No way.
And so one of those two may be his next movie, or maybe it's another Godzilla. But I think he'd be great for the Thundercats. I would like to see him do live action Thundercats. That'd be fun. You know what else audiences love for some reason? The Venom movies from Sony. They're fun.
They love them.
They love them. Venom 3 coming out later this year. Nobody knew anything about We have some details now. It has an official title and it has a new release date. It is called Venom the Last Dance, which is like such a campy, weird
title. Is there a recital at the end?
Yeah, what is it? What does that make you think of? I think of the song right away. Last Dance for Romance. But also the Chicago Bulls documentary.
I was just going to say the Chicago Bulls documentary.
The Last Dance.
I was thinking about Julia Stiles movies.
Save the Last Dance. So it's just a very cliche title, but does that mean there's no more Venom movies or he's going?
People like the Venom movies. Mm. I mean, we are coming off. I mean, I don't know if it can get any lower for the Sony Spider-Verse.
Well, they still have a Kraven and they have this. So we'll see how bad it gets. I don't know.
I don't think it can get. I mean, you have to actively try to make it worse than Madam Web.
Madam Web, which is already on video on demand, by the way. They were like, fuck it, just put it out on fucking VOD. Nobody's going to see this. So you can watch and laugh at home now. So the release date, it was coming out November 8th this year. It has been pushed up to October 25th, 2024, just in time for Halloween. We don't know. There's no plot of anything out there. The last time, if you remember, we saw Eddie Brock was the end of Spider-Man No Way Home. At the post-credit scene, he was there, and then he got blipped back, and a little piece of the thing was left behind. But there has been set photos from Spain with various Day of the Dead-like imagery. And then there is a picture, Venom 3 set photo, with Tom Hardy wearing exactly what the clothes he had on in that post credit scene from Spider-Man No Way Home. This one joining the cast, Chiwetel Ejiofor and Juno Temple from Ted Lasso.
Chiwetel Ejiofor
will be in this and Juno Temple. I don't know. They're pushing it up, so I don't know what that means.
It means that they know that this is the only movie that they can make money off of other than Spider-Verse.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the only other
they're,
thing.
They're rushing it out
that's
there.
Kind
I don't
of
even
working.
Know. Who's even going to fight? Like, what, you know?
Carnage was dead in the last one. I don't even remember what the fuck happened in that last one. I know Woody Harrelson was Carnage. And
yeah.
It's going to be like a female Venom. She-Venom.
Yeah, there was like the Shriek character. Wasn't that in the last one? I don't know.
There's Toxin? Isn't that one of his kids?
Listen, just give me a goofy Tom Hardy. The goofier, the better. It's the only thing that makes these movies.
Yeah, I mean that's the redeeming quality of these movies. This is just the goofiness of Tom Hardy talking to himself.
Literally talking to himself since he does the Venom voice.
That is a red one. Oh shit!
It's great. Okay, last thing. Back to Batman. The Batman 2. Has been delayed.
Lame.
It was supposed to come out October 3rd, 2025. It got pushed back a whole year.
Why?
October 2nd, 2026. They're saying like the strike and whatnot, but listen, by that date, it'll have been 4.5 years after the first movie came out. Two Joker movies will have been released in the meantime. Does it really take that long to write a fucking Batman?
It's been 4 years. Wait, by that date.
By 2026. The first Batman came out 2022. It's already been like 2 years since the fucking movie came
out. Oh, yeah, well.
Is it something to do with the James Gunn-iverse of, you know, DC? Or does
that could be a factor. I just was curious if it was that or not.
Does Matt Reeves just take time to write things? You can't write a fucking Batman movie in 4 years? Jesus Christ, Matt Reeves. I mean, he's been doing other things, maybe. I don't know, producing.
So they haven't started filming it?
Oh, no. I think.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. And then the strike hurt where they couldn't write, obviously. But, and then they need to cast another Batman and Robin for The Brave and the Bold. Or are they going to make Pattinson the one Batman? Do they need two Batmans?
One Batman to rule them all. Well, it's like, okay. So you have an origins kind of Batman, beginner Batman in the first the Batman.
Right.
So like you don't have to retread that. You already you're up and running with the Batman.
Just go.
They could change like the costume if they wanted to, and maybe I'm not saying the tone, but like fit it into the universe a little bit more if they wanted to. But I think they're going to do that whole Joker that they teased at the end in this movie.
That, or is it Hush? I thought they were going to do Hush.
I've heard Hush too. Yeah. I think from what I'm reading in this Deadline article, it sounds like they're just trying to distance it from Gunn's movie.
Superman, which will come out. Yeah, that summer. Same year. Because it is its own, its little Elseworlds universe. Right. So, but shit, it's a long time. I mean, on the plus side, it'll give me another 2 years to rewatch The Batman a second time.
I haven't seen that movie since I saw it in the
theater. Me either. And I'm like, oh, I want to watch this again. I never got around to it. So yeah, another 2 years to watch.
There's so much other shit to watch.
Yeah. It's a long ass movie. We are getting that Penguin show though on Max later this year with the Colin.
Yeah. I wasn't clamoring for that. I don't know why they did that.
We'll see how that, I thought apparently,
they made it because the fact that Colin Farrell is in that suit, everyone's just going,
they love it.
What the hell? He's how great. Is that Colin Farrell?
Yeah. And I did hear rumors that Pattinson's Batman may be a cameo or something in it, possibly. I mean, it'll give us something to watch while waiting for the Batman. That's all we're doing. We're going to take a break here, play some promos, and come back and discuss the OG Ghostbusters right after this.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Pardon the interruption. I have some news which I believe you will find most interesting.
Would you like to hear the latest in Marvel television, film, video games, and comic books? Or are you looking for some ideas on what to pick up on New Comic Book Day? Well, join Mike and Eric on Mighty Marvel Geeks every Saturday night on Sorcerer Radio and every Sunday on the Weeby Geeks Network for all things Marvel.
There is a matter that requires your attention.
Mighty Marvel Geeks, assemble!
All wrapped up here, sir. Will there be anything else?
We'll get you back to your regularly scheduled podcast in just a minute, but we wanted to introduce ourselves. I'm Jason.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Blake on this highly produced advertisement.
That's right. It's the History of Bad Ideas, a.k.a. Hobie. You can find us on Twitter at Bad Ideas Podcast and on Facebook at The History of Bad Ideas. But if you like a podcast roundtable with 3 to 5 guests usually every week, depending on sick leave, talking about all things geek, including movies,
TV.
I ain't getting paid for this yet.
Blake bitching about something and ranting, and comic books and anything else that we can think of. We have a top 5 list every week, along with a box office news, and somehow we have listeners, so they send us some feedback we answer every week. You can find us on iTunes,
Stitcher,
Facebook,
Spotify,
and any good podcast app, because if you can't find us on that podcast app, it's not a good podcast app.
Damn straight. Roger says goodbye.
Goodbye.
Listener, if you enjoy this podcast, it is a great time to join our Patreon fan club. Visit jockandnerd.com/Patreon.
Jock and Nerd!
And you can sign up. You can give back on a monthly or annual basis, and you get fun stuff. Like access to an exclusive podcast feed where the shows come out early, bonus content. We do monthly Discord hangouts. This month's hangout is this week, fellas. Thursday, March 21st.
I will not be there.
Oh, you won't be there. Rugs will be there.
Yeah, I'll be there. I'll be drunk, too.
It'll be fun. A lot of things to discuss. A lot of things coming out this week. And then other fun things, other fun tiers. Check it out all. JockandNerd.com/Patreon. We appreciate all the continued support. Let's get to this week's movie review, Anthony.
Yes.
First of all, we're going to be reviewing the OG Ghostbusters from 1984. How did we get to this movie?
Well, there's a movie coming out this week called, what is it, Ghostbusters the Frozen Empire?
Frozen Empire, yes.
And spoiler alert, we're not going to review that movie on time.
Spoiler alert.
Yes.
I will be out of town this weekend, and there's another movie coming out this week called Roadhouse.
That's right.
Where I don't have to go to a theater, so correct. I have very limited time, so we're just going to review Roadhouse next week, and we'll review Frozen Empire at a later date, probably 3 or 4 weeks late,
yeah, because there's
other
movies.
Stuff coming out.
Yeah, a bunch of fun
but
things.
But in anticipation of Frozen Empire, we've never reviewed the classic Ghostbusters, so here we are.
Here's your spoiler alert.
We got nothing else to do.
Yeah, this is great. It's a fucking classic movie. I would imagine everyone has seen it, but not everybody actually has seen it, I learned this week. So here's your spoiler alert.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler time.
The kids these days, man, the 20-year-olds, ain't seen the fucking Ghostbusters. It is a travesty.
They don't care about movies.
Also, interesting to note about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, that's literally coming out in like 5 days later this week. No reviews or Rotten Tomatoes score or any kind of early reactions or anything about that movie yet. And it's coming out later this week. So we'll see.
That's usually not a good sign.
That's not a good sign. Usually not a good sign. But that is what is happening right now. In the meantime, we can enjoy a fucking classic. Ghostbusters came out the summer of 1984. June 1984. I was 8 years old. I remember 1984.
What? No, you weren't. You were about 32.
I was 32 in an 8-year-old's body.
1984. Should we do what the box office was like that year?
Yes. I'll have you know right now, Ghostbusters number one, 1984. 1984, not two.
That is correct. Ghostbusters was number one.
Yeah, but a great year. Read the list.
Let me read the top 10, and then I'll point out some other ones outside of the top 10. Ghostbusters, number one. Number two, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Fuck yeah.
Number three, Gremlins.
Oh, Mogwai.
Number four, The Karate Kid.
Danielson.
Number five, Police Academy.
Yeah.
Is that a quote, or are you just saying yeah?
There's no quote.
If you're
going to
do quotes, you better do fucking quotes.
No.
Six was Footloose.
I don't remember a quote.
I want to dance.
Seven, Beverly Hills Cop.
I ain't falling for a banana in a tailpipe.
There you go. Eight, Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Where is Spock? I don't know. I've never seen that movie.
Nine was Terms of Endearment.
Imagine at some point somebody said, I love you.
And then 10 was Romancing the Stone.
Oh, that's a great movie. I don't remember any quotes from it, but Kathleen Turner.
Also on this list from this year, just to point out some other known movies. Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Head down.
Yeah. Red Dawn.
Oh, yeah.
The Will Natural. Reads.
What's that one?
The Natural.
The Natural. Baseball.
Oh.
The Terminator.
Oh, John Connor.
Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter.
Oh boy.
Conan the Destroyer. The Last Starfighter. Scarface.
Oh!
Also, 16 Candles.
Splash also came out that year.
Dune.
Oh, yes. So, here's the funny thing. In 1984...
Supergirl.
Supergirl also. We did that one.
Yeah.
In 1984, you could buy tickets to Ghostbusters and Dune. In 2021 or 2, you could buy tickets to Ghostbusters and Dune. In 2024, you could buy tickets to Ghostbusters and Dune in the movie theaters. It's kind of crazy.
Twinkie Dink.
Top Secret, The Neverending Story. 1984 is an amazing Amadeus, Breaking, Beat Street, all that shit.
84 doesn't fuck around.
84 is an amazing year for fucking movies. They don't make them like that anymore. On Rotten Tomatoes, the original Ghostbusters, out of 79 reviews, sitting at 95%.
Oh, shit.
88% audience rating. We just talked about the box office. The movie was made for about $25 to $30 million. But it was number one at the box office for 7 weeks until Purple Rain came out in August and knocked it off. And it ended the year as the number one grossing movie for the year. And it's kind of like the first comedy blockbuster to ever happen. We'll get to all of that. Directed and produced by the late Ivan Reitman and written by Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis, and it says Rick Moranis too, but mostly Dan Aykroyd and the late Harold Ramis, starring, of course, Bill Murray as Dr. Peter Venkman, Dan Aykroyd as Ray Stantz, Harold Ramis as Egon Spengler, you got Sigourney Weaver as Dana, Rick Moranis as Louis Tully, Annie Potts as Janine Melnitz, William Atherton as Walter Peck, EPA asshole, Ernie Hudson as Winston Zeddemore. And there is your main fucking iconic cast. You got Saturday Night Live, television, improv, stand-up dudes working together. Anthony What's your relationship to this movie? I feel like, what do you think, everybody has seen this movie?
Ghostbusters was, I say this about a lot of different things, but Ghostbusters, I was a huge fan of Ghostbusters as a kid.
Nice.
I vividly remember watching these movies and then putting on a backpack and there being, my uncle was renovating his floorboard or like his living room and taking the floor out. And I was watching him waiting for ghosts to come out and wanting to fight the ghosts. And there was a fly. I remember vividly there being a fly and me attacking the fly with the, my imaginary proton pack thinking it was a ghost.
That's awesome.
I loved Ghostbusters as a kid. I think I saw the second one first, for what it's worth.
Okay.
Loved the second one and then saw the first one. Loved the first one. Yeah, my relationship with these movies, I've always had an affinity for Ghostbusters. It's been a long time, though, since I've revisited the original OG 1984 movie. It's but I got into it as a kid.
Yeah.
I think I got into it with the TV shows and the video games, and then I saw the movies.
Everything.
Everything, yeah, I was all about Ghostbusters. The songs and the logo, and I mean, everything was just super iconic.
It was fun to watch it again, but it is one of those movies that was like always on TV for a while. I remember it was always on. So before we'll give our initial thoughts to me and Rugboy, but I want people who haven't seen Ghostbusters, give us the plot. What happens? This is a rated PG movie. Let's just keep that in the back of our mind for a second. Hour 45, rated PG. What is the plot of Ghostbusters, Derry?
It's about these three university professors that are basically chasing ghosts, the supernatural, and they get fired from their jobs for doing this, and they decide to start a business of hunting ghosts. And while they've started this business, an ancient evil is also on its way to destroy the world that they have to contend with.
Yes. Iconic shit. Come on. Rugs, what's your relationship with this movie?
I believe I saw Ghostbusters in the theater. I'm not sure. I might have been 8 or something.
Yeah.
I think
I did too.
And a lot of it went over my head. I just liked the ghost stuff and the proton pack stuff. And I didn't realize it was as funny as it was till I saw it later in life. And then Peter Venkman's character is just hilarious. And there's just a lot of funny. It's a funny movie. And I think it's a classic. It's a classic. It has movie magic in there. It's great. So I always had an affinity for Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters 2, I like also. It's just a quotable movie that you can watch. And I wasn't into the toys and stuff. I didn't go that far. I watched the cartoon a little bit because it was animated well. But that's about as far as I go with Ghostbusters.
I mean, that's the thing. What can you say? It is absolutely an iconic comedy classic. You have quotable lines. The logo I used to draw when I was a kid over and over again. The fucking music, the toys, the cartoons, there were spinoffs, sequels, video games, the Halloween costumes, both those you would make at home, which I did. I made my own proton pack out of cardboard, my own Ghostbusters costume. They've left us with, remember the Ecto Cooler from Hi-C? Like the junk food. And 40 years later, you can go, who are you going to call? And everybody knows the answer. It's wild. It's a great New York movie. And just a fucking all-timer there. Watching it again, though, it's also so kind of edgy and racy for a PG movie.
Oh, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So as a 9-year-old, when I watched this, I fucking loved it right away for a number of reasons, but also because they swore a lot. There was dick jokes. There is an implied ghost blowjob.
But you didn't get. Did you get that as a 9-year-old?
I don't know, but I remember the swearing and the dick lines. I vividly remember to this day some of these lines. And Dana Barrett is like super sexy, and she even at one point.
I mean, Sigourney Weaver.
Sigourney Weaver, yeah, as Dana Barrett. Like, I mean, she's like, I want you inside me, and I was like, holy shit, this is a PG movie. We've gotten so soft. Anyways, Anthony, let's start with you. Where do you want to start? Yeah. Overall thoughts. Overall, it again. Does it hold up?
Yeah, as mentioned, it's been a while since I've seen this, but you know, I echo everything you guys said as a kid. I think I saw this a couple times when I was a little older, but as a kid, you know, all that stuff you mentioned went over my head. I just loved the ghost stuff. I loved, you know, the idea of the proton packs and the, you know, the car and all that shit. But yeah, as an adult, watched it again last night, and it definitely surprised me how my perspective on this has changed. I still really enjoy the movie. I laughed out loud a ton of times.
Yeah.
That being said, I feel like this is a lightning in the bottle movie.
Yeah.
Like, if you really evaluate the movie, the lead character, played by Bill Murray, Venkman, is just a creepy asshole.
Yes, he's a jerk.
I mean, in the literally the opening scene, they introduce this guy and he's fucking flirting with his students
while electroshocking
and electroshocking a dude and like rigging it to fucking fuck his student later.
I love that. I love that in the beginning, that even when the guy gets the ESP card right, he looks at the girl, winks at her,
and then later on, you know, he meets Dana Barrett, and I mean, he has no interest in helping her. He just wants to fuck her.
Yeah, he just wants to bang
and
her. It's great.
And he just wants to bang her, and she kicks him out. And then the end of the movie, she just falls for him, and it makes no sense. Like why
that's
she
like
would
every
ever go
80s
for him.
Movie
yes.
though.
Yes,
but then you throw that in, and then you throw in the rest of the characters, Egon and Ray, like have a little bit to do, but William Zeddemore, played by Ernie, he has nothing. Like I don't even know why he's in the movie.
So I can explain that. But Winston comes in way late.
I mean, really, to be honest, this movie could have been two people.
Yeah,
and it would have been Egon and Stance could have been the same guy. So, like, you take all those things. Yeah, I mean, what does Egon really do?
Well, Egon...
What does Stance really do? They're the same... You could make that the same character. I know it's iconic because you look back on it, but they're not really doing anything different. and then you throw in the fact that, like, none of the characters really evolve. None of them really learn anything. There's no real message here. The plot's just pretty much an adventure. None of this should work. But it does.
Yeah.
For some reason, it fucking works. It's lightning in a bottle, like I mentioned. I laughed a ton during the movie. The blowjob scene was just fucking ridiculous.
I forgot about that.
I totally forgot that happens. There's some things that don't really hold up, like the matte paintings.
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever.
The top of the building and stuff.
Yeah, the top of the building. The dogs, whatever the fuck you call them.
The demons,
whenever they land,
yes.
Their like legs are splattered out.
Yeah.
But again, really funny. Venkman shouldn't work, but he makes some funny jokes. You have Rick Moranis, who's hilarious. Sigourney Weaver, I've never thought of her as being good looking until you watch this movie.
She's sexy in this.
She's great. And then you have the iconic song, you know, the Ghostbusters theme. And you have a real asshole played by the guy that's the environmentalist.
Oh, Walter Peck. Yes.
Walter Peck. Yeah, I mean, he's such an asshole
that
he makes Bill Murray, who's also an asshole, like likable because he's such an asshole. And he's in a great asshole in All Time History because he's also the asshole in Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
So you just have a lot of like things that happen that coalesce into a movie that really, if you string this out as like analyzing movies, it doesn't work, but it does. Lightning in the bottle. Or a ghost in a proton pack.
Ghost in a proton pack because they really haven't been able to replicate the success.
No, because
in any
because
of the
if
sequels.
You watch part two,
yeah,
I like part two. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. It's the same exact
movie. It's the same movie, and it just doesn't work as well because we have the first one. William Atherton, who played Walter Peck, I heard after this movie, people would yell at him and throw shit at him, and he got attacked at a bar because he plays
a
good bad
guy. They'd say he was dickless.
Yes, that's one of my favorite lines.
This man has no dick.
That's true. Yes, this man has no dick. Ruggs, what do you think? Do you think Anthony's right about the characters? Because I actually love the four different characters and what their roles are.
Well, he's got a point, but it's also, 80s movies, really different. They were in a different time. And a lot more edgy than we were. Like, this is a PG movie. Kids would see this movie and parents would be okay with taking their kids to see this, yeah, even with the language and the sexual content, because they weren't infantilizing everybody as much as they do now. But you got Venkman. Venkman's clearly a guy who used Egon and Ray to get by in school. They wrote all of his papers.
Right. Yeah.
They fucking did all the work, and he just was the guy who helped get them laid.
But he's like the salesman too, right? He gets things done. He's
right. He was a carny.
Yeah.
He was raised in a carny family, right? Okay. So that, I think I got that from something. But yeah, so he was just like a dude who a good salesman, a good smooth talker, who could whatever, disarm people with jokes and stuff like that. He was like a charlatan. Everybody, even the guy at the school, knows he was full of shit.
He's great.
He was working.
But then the contrast, you got Egon, who's very stoic and smart.
Yeah, he's the serious scientist.
Very serious, yeah.
And then Ray is more like the hopeful,
yes,
like little child,
he's
of
goofy,
the group.
That, yes, yeah, childlike, but he's honest, also a techie. And then when they introduce Winston, you get like the everyman, the outsider joining them, the everyman character.
He is the everyman, but he barely has anything to do.
He has the last line in the movie, which everyone, where he's like, I love this city. But he has one of my favorite lines in the movie after Zool goes, are you a god?
Oh, that's a great
and
line.
He goes, no. And she's like, now die. And he goes, Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes. It's such a great line.
Yeah, that's great.
But Peter Venkman does steal the show with a lot of his lines.
It's his movie.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I'm like, it was very hard for me to get behind them as like heroes, role models, because like they're all these old kind of pudgy, like receding hairline dudes. And I was like, I wanted Arnold. You know, I wanted some guys with muscles. They could take a ghost and beat his ass.
That's what's great about these four. They become heroes to the city.
But like,
let me point out real quick, just while we're on the how they're old men.
Yeah.
Bill Murray. I looked this up. Could not believe it.
Yeah.
Bill Murray is 34 years old in this movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he looks like he's 55 years old.
That's what 34 looked like.
I was like, that's a rough 34.
In 1984. They are they're not fresh faced, but they're young. Like, Dan Aykroyd's very young looking, but he was probably in his 30s too.
He's in his 30s for that.
But it is a big risk using these SNL guys and putting them in a movie. And it paid
34?
Off.
Yeah. He's 34 when the movie comes out.
That's what 34 look like.
He looks like he's been shot at. He's been people shot at him and missed, but they shit on him all day. They definitely hit because he does not. That's the worst looking 34 you'll ever see. It's the worst. It's worse than what Imran probably looked like at 34.
That's what a 34-year-old looked like back then. I remember that. 40
years old. I think Imran can win that one.
Listen. Yeah. Back then, 48 was like really old looking, and I don't think I'm, I don't know, maybe I'm there. I thought you were dead. You're 48. But I do, let's talk about some of the 80s-ness of this movie. This movie made me want to smoke cigarettes inside a lot. That's one thing I miss.
That's what you're getting here?
Everybody is smoking inside. But I do love when Ray sees Slimer and the cigarette's just hanging on his lip. It's just stuck there. But there's a lot of smoking.
The 80s-ness of this
movie.
That's the thing you want to talk about.
I don't know.
I mean, there's the iconic song.
Okay, let's talk about the song. Right. Yes.
Like, I think the song, part of the song makes a lot of the movie, too.
It does. It's a great song that has a rough history. So apparently they had like 50 or 60 different people working on songs for this. And they used Huey Lewis's I Want a New Drug as a temporary track while they were shooting the movie. And they went to Huey. They wanted him to make a song for the movie. He was busy working on Back to the Future because he does Power of Love and all those songs for that. So they get Ray Parker Jr. This is, of course, Ray Parker Jr.'s only hit. Nobody ever heard of him since or before. Huge song. I used to love this fucking song, but the tempo is very similar. So similar, in fact, that later on, Huey Lewis sues Ray Parker Jr. Ray settles for an undisclosed amount. Okay. Years go by. Huey discloses the amount somewhere in an interview, and Ray sues Huey and I think gets that money back. So that I thought was crazy. So they just
really?
Yes. They both paid back each other. But I remember the video. There was all these celebrities in it, and this call and response. Fucking great song. It does make the whole movie. I mean, you got Bobby Brown in the second movie, which is good, but it's no Ghostbusters Ray Parker Jr.
Okay, so what happens in the movie is they find out through the most contrived thing. Like, so the minute they start a business, all these ghosts appear.
Very convenient, right. Yes.
More ghosts than they've ever seen before. And so their business takes off and they're going to these different places and busting ghosts. And it just so happened, like, one of the first clients that they had, everything that's culminating is in her building, and she gets possessed and Rick Moranis gets possessed and they have to have sex.
Yes, that's the most implausible part of the movie is Sigourney Weaver bangs Rick Moranis because she's... Well,
but they tease that, though, yeah. Because throughout the... Earlier in the film, Rick really... I don't even know if he loves her, but he cares about her a lot.
Yeah, as a neighbor. And
and he's trying to ingratiate himself with her, and she really wants nothing to do with him. I mean, she sympathizes for him, but she doesn't want to be with him or hang around him.
Lewis Tully.
They never acknowledge the fact that they fucked either.
No.
Like after the fact.
Yeah, I thought he was going to like smoke a cigarette or something, but it's just they just cut to it. But I love that.
No. I mean, like after they come to and they're like, oh, we fucked.
Yeah. No, that was they just. That was
they don't even
the
mention
the keymaster
it.
And the gatekeeper. And to me, I love the party scene, and like he improvised a lot of that.
How does he have that many friends?
No, they're all clients. He's an accountant. He's like, he's like, that way I could write this off as a tax write-off. I invited clients, and he's just telling people everything.
I love the part where he's got the hot girl in there. He's like, let's start dancing. And he starts and just for a brief second, he starts dancing, and I was cracking up the way he's moving around.
He is so funny. Every scene. And then you hear he hears the growl from the demon dog. I love his line. He goes, okay, who brought the dog? And the thing just busts out of the door. And he's, and that whole scene where he's running across the park to the restaurant. Hilarious.
When Bill Murray gets there, the guy, he's like, what happened? And the guy goes, some idiot brought a cougar to a party.
Oh yes. They thought it was a cougar. But yeah, no, I love the whole business, and it's very funny. Like they get the firehouse, they start this business. They already have made like a TV commercial that quickly.
Oh, I wrote that down. I go, like, how do they have already the connections to make a TV commercial?
And they start to become celebrities, after the increased ghost activity.
Well, it's they catch Slimer.
Right. The hotel scene is fantastic. First, I always laugh.
When they shoot the woman, the
when
maid.
They shoot the cleaning lady.
What the hell are you doing?
Yeah, and she reacts. Yes. I mean, she's pissed, but she reacts so calmly.
Great reaction.
She starts picking up the towel. Yeah.
Like the toilet paper is on fire. So I saw a behind the scenes video where they said she was actually yelling at the producers and the stunt people because she didn't know the explosion was going to be that big. She was yelling at the filmmakers, like, for real. What the hell are you doing? That always made me fucking laugh. You have the classic he slimed me line. And you also learn they're wearing, like, unlicensed nuclear accelerators on their back. You learn not to cross the streams.
Mm.
Very important. And then you get Bankman going, we came, we saw, we came. I love when he's at the elevator and they're like, there's a cockroach up on 12. I'm going to take care of it.
Well, they demand the money from the guy.
He's like, I will not pay.
Yeah, $5,000 from
him. Put it right back, no problem.
Right. You know what's funny too about, or not funny, but interesting about this scene is when, as a kid, you know, I watched all the cartoons and all that stuff first, and Slimer was such a huge thing in the cartoons. And in this movie, when I watched it, I got all excited seeing Slimer, and he's not even. It's just the first ghost they catch. He doesn't really.
Yeah.
There's nothing particularly special about the character in this movie.
Yeah, like, so
it's just a green ghost.
It's just a green ghost. A little backstory on Slimer. He was referred to as the onion-smelling ghost because that's what the puppet looked like. They also want... So this all goes back to originally. Dan Aykroyd wrote this for himself, John Belushi, Eddie Murphy. And he started writing this in the 80s, and then...
Wasn't John Candy also?
John Candy was originally cast as Lewis Tully. In fact, in the storyboards, it is drawn with a John Candy-looking actor in the storyboards. But Candy drops out. Belushi dies of an overdose. Eddie Murphy, they can't afford him, and he does Beverly Hills Cop, right? So when they were designing Slimer, Dan Aykroyd wanted them to make him look like John Belushi from Animal House, Pluto. Fuck. And that's kind of what they did. So it's kind of like a tribute to Belushi. But yes, he's never named in the movie, and he doesn't actually get popular until the cartoon, which I loved also as a kid. It's fantastic. And the second movie is what makes him big.
He's in the second movie again.
He does show up.
I don't know if he has
a big part, but he's in it.
No, he eventually goes on to be like their mascot, and like the real Ghostbusters cartoon in the last few years was called Slimer and the Real Ghostbusters. And like, remember all the Slimer merchandise, fucking Slimer?
Yeah, people love Slimer.
Everywhere. Yeah. But he is just the first ghost they catch.
When you bring up those names, was it John Belushi?
Yes, and Eddie Murphy. Like, yeah.
If those guys were in the movie?
Yeah. Better movie?
I think it's just as good.
Is it just as good or better movie?
Maybe even better.
I think
it could have worked with any like rotation of those guys.
The chemistry in this is
Eddie
great.
Murphy would have been like Venkman.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy would be the Venkman character.
Yeah. You couldn't make Eddie Murphy William Zeddemore. That'd be like,
so here's,
no. That'd be atrocious.
Here's what happened with the Winston character, right? First of all, Ernie Hudson auditioned like 5 times.
I read he was kind of upset with the way it turned out.
Originally, he had a lot more backstory.
You can tell.
He had a military background. He was the one that was going to get slimed and said he slimed me. And he was originally the one who thought of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man at the end. Once Bill Murray, who they never were sure Bill Murray actually committed to this movie. They didn't know until the first day of shooting if he was going to fucking show up. I don't think he ever read the script. So once Bill Murray got there, right before they started shooting, they gave Ernie Hudson a new script, and his whole part was reduced. A lot of his stuff was given to Bill Murray to make room for more Bill Murray jokes. Hence why he shows up like halfway in the movie answering the want ad.
He doesn't have anything to do in the movie. He doesn't even need to be in the movie.
But I feel like he's like the everyman, like who's happy to be there and making a paycheck, doing whatever.
Yeah, but what does he do in the movie?
What does he do? Does he
catch? They break into 2-man teams?
Yeah, you need 4 streams.
They were so busy they needed extra hands.
Got another proton.
Like, I agree with you. I like the 4 men. When I grew up watching the cartoon, it was always, you know, the black guy was in the movie too, and or in the show.
Yeah,
he had a part. But when you watch the movie, I honestly think it could have been with just 2 guys, and you would have been fine.
I mean, he's not on a lot of the posters. When the posters came out, it was just like the 3 of them. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, I mean, in the movie's really Eddie of Bill Murray.
Bill Murray does kind of steal the whole movie.
Like I will go back to Venkman or Spangler and Stance could have been the same guy. Could have been the same exact character.
So Harold Ramis, who helped write the movie and wrote this part, they had people lined up for that role, but then they were like, you should just do it. So,
well, he wrote the movie,
too. Oh, yeah, and he wrote the movie, right. Did you notice also in that jail scene, fucking Carl Winslow, Reginald Bell Johnson?
Yeah.
Quick cameo. I was like, fucking Carl.
So the deal is that Dan Aykroyd wrote like multiple versions of the script, and every time that they were talking about casting, he'd have to rewrite it. But then it was getting crazy. And he needed someone to come help him ground it a little bit. So he got Harold Ramis to help him write it.
The original.
I love this. I love the jail scene while we're on it. Yeah. I love that the prisoners surround them too and are looking at the plans.
They're all into it.
Yeah. It's like, why do they have plans in the jail?
How did they get the blueprints into the jail?
Venkman's like, everybody get that? And he's looking around. And that's where like Winston kind of gives like a good speech there.
What does he say?
I forget.
The only thing I remember about Winston was the line about the being a god, and then him just applying for the thing.
Yeah.
In the beginning, he just shows up.
Yeah,
he's just like they don't even do a tease where they like show a newspaper clipping saying they need extra people.
Right.
He just shows. Now we have this scene where he shows up.
I feel like he's getting more time in these new movies to kind of make up for that. Like, he's probably got a bigger role.
But he does get slimed in the second one. Him and Aykroyd are underneath the tunnel, the ghost train goes by, and they both go right through them, and they both have like the shocked looks. So like, oh my god, did we just get run over by a ghost train?
Yeah, he got kind of the short shift on this whole thing.
For sure.
Aykroyd's original thing, actually, it took place in the future. There was a whole ghost-busting franchise company, and they would travel interdimensionally, and Ivan Reitman's like, you know, this is going to cost too much money. Just set it now, make them start a business, struggling, and he really grounds the whole thing. And there's a lot of guerrilla filmmaking, so there's a lot of fun facts about this movie. Again, one of...
Jeez, you love the fun facts on
this. Here's the biggest one. The name, Ghostbusters. This is where it all gets crazy, because there was a 1975 kids show, variety show, called The Ghostbusters. Have you ever seen this cartoon, Anthony? It features two adult men and a gorilla in like a jalopy car, in like an old-timey car.
Yeah, and then they made a cartoon. Filmation had a cartoon out.
Yes, and this was right after this movie, while Dick... which is the other company, was trying to make a cartoon on this movie. So while they were shooting the movie, they did not have the rights for it to be called The Ghostbusters, like two different words. So you can watch videos where they do several takes where they go Ghost Smashers, Ghost Stoppers. They had different names. And every time they say Ghostbusters, they did another take with different words because they didn't know what the fuck the movie was going to be called until... they shoot that crowd scene, and the whole crowd is chanting Ghostbusters. After that, they were like, please let us have this name. Like, they couldn't reshoot that. I don't think they got alternate takes. And finally, they settled on using Ghostbusters, one word. And then the cartoon comes out. Filmation tries to beat them to the punch, putting out the Ghostbusters cartoon. They have to call theirs the real Ghostbusters. And it's a much better cartoon than the Filmation one. I watched both of them. And it was confusing at the time. Why are there two fucking Ghostbusters cartoons on TV? So, like, a lot of this was last minute with the name, which I think is fascinating. So, anyways, yes, we meet Walter Peck, EPA. He makes them shut down their containment unit. All the ghosts escape. And if you notice, they never actually collect them all again at the end of the movie. They just defeat the Marshmallow Man and Zool. All the ghosts are still fucking out there. So I thought that was interesting. And then the whole scene on the top of the building at the end is it's fantastic, especially like when they get there, the crowd's there chanting their name, the ground opens up and swallows them. Yeah. And I remember being a kid going, oh shit, they're dead. And then they
call the scenes prior to that with the ghost flying into the air and then the taxi driver being a skeleton.
Oh, that's great too. Yeah.
Practical. Slimer coming out of the hot dog cart.
Yep. And then, like, Dana just blows out her wall for some reason, like, her apartment explodes.
She's doing her best Exorcist kind of impersonation.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Where he's got a chain down to the bed and
stuff.
The
floating is great. And actually, they talked to, like, magician Doug Henning and used a similar effect to shoot that, like, all in camera, the floating and the turning. Another great line is when they get to the roof and they both get zapped and they turn into a dog. They look at Beckman, and Beckman's like, okay, so she's a dog.
I got to talk about this one thing.
Yeah.
So Beckman goes over to her apartment, and she's possessed by Zool, right?
Yeah.
And so you hear him say, he's like, I just dosed her with Thorazine. I'm like, yes. He's carrying Thorazine him, like on a needle?
I thought that was also interesting. Why do you have fucking all that Thorazine?
Interesting. That's a way to put it. Jesus. I'm telling you, this guy's a fucking creep.
He's planning on a date over there with a full syringe of Thorazine.
This guy, there's literally almost barely anything likable on this guy.
And she goes,
a fucking creep.
When she
could go one step further and say he might have wanted to assault her.
He almost does, because she's like, I want you inside me. And he's like, okay, no, I shouldn't. Well, and he's kind of hems and haws a little bit.
Well, he doesn't do it. You got to give him that. He doesn't want to have sex with a horny demon.
It was, like, I'm not into possessed chicks. It was the 80s, but very edgy for a PG movie.
I mean, if you watch Revenge of the Nerds, all doing terrible things there.
Well, even before that, you know, she outright rejects him in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because she could see right through him. He's a fucking creep. He's not even there. And then she, this is the fucking messages of these movies. And it's the 80s, so I get it. It's of its time. But when once he becomes popular and on TV, that's when she's like, all right, I'll go out on a date with this man.
Yes, that's true.
It's like nothing changes. He just becomes more popular, and she goes, yeah, he's worth dating this time.
Yeah, like she kicks.
Well, he's just more than just a regular pervert. He's right. A pervert who has some juice. So.
No, I love all that when he first walks in the apartment and he's got that little squeezy wand and then he does the keys on the piano. He's like, oh, they hate that. Just to be an asshole.
Hey, that scene, though, where she's sitting on the fucking lazy boy, yes, whatever the fuck it is.
The arms come out.
Yeah. That's pretty damn. I remember as a kid, I went going, oh, fuck.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great scene. Yeah, all practical, and they slit her, and like the door is warping. And then, yeah, you see Gozer. Oh, Gozer was originally supposed to be Grace Jones, but then she didn't want to do it.
It was supposed to be Paul Rubens.
Oh, no, you're right. I'm sorry. It was supposed to be Pee Wee Herman. And then this version, they modeled after, yes,
oh, God.
They wanted Paul Rubens to play Gozer originally.
I like it as the kind of ambiguous looking female.
Right. Then they got this, I think she's a model actress, and it was inspired by Grace Jones, David Bowie, this look, which is, it was a cool look. And she was kind of intimidating and scary. I don't know if Paul Rubens would have worked. Would he have made it goofy?
I don't know, but... I'm trying to match that. It's wild.
I just want to talk about the dream scene that Ray has where he's apparently...
We're bouncing all over.
Yeah. There's just so many things in this movie. That I forgot about that scene. And you clearly see his belt come off and his eyes go crazy. And it's just amazing what it applies. It was intended to be a longer scene. And there's a deleted scene where they were going to introduce a love interest for...
I love that he's dreaming about getting a BJ from a ghost. That ghost is a playmate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I forgot what her name is.
It was such a random thing to put in this fucking dream sequence.
The playmate was Kimberly Heron.
Oh, shit. Floating in the air, yeah.
Yeah, you look her up. Kimberly with a Y. Yeah. A-Y-B-E-R-L-Y.
I'm going to get too
Heron,
distracted.
H-E-R-R-I-N.
There is a Godzilla tie into this movie.
What?
Yeah, the guy in the Marshmallow Man outfit, his name is Bill Bryan. He modeled his walk on Godzilla, he said, kind of lumbering. Small Godzilla tie.
That's how we're going to that is one of the most iconic scenes ever.
Yeah. Oh, I love it where you see him behind the building just walking and you're like, what the fuck? What is that? And then what a great shot. And it's just...
I mean, not only that, but the build up prior where they're, you know, the Gozer's going to take
Choose
on
your destructor.
Yeah. And then they all try to clear their minds and you can just see the look on Dan Aykroyd Ray's face. He's like, oh, what the fuck did you just do?
I love that because she just goes, a destructor has been chosen. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I didn't pick anything. Did you pick anything? And then they all look at Ray and he's like, I couldn't help it. This is the first thing that popped into my head. And now how iconic is that fucking Stay Puft Marshmallow Man?
Well, did you guys catch though when Bill Murray is in her apartment?
Yeah.
Dana's research looking to investigate the original incident on her counter next to the eggs
are
Stay Puft Marshmallows.
Oh, there's a bag of Stay Puft Marshmallows.
So they tease that if you have an eagle eye, you'll
catch
it.
That's great.
I did see that. Yeah.
And then you get the fucking Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
And he's like smiley at first, but when it gets like mean and scary, it's pretty fucking scary. And that whole, they incinerate him.
Oh, come on. It's pretty fucking scary. Stop it.
Like when he's burning, like that's kind of disturbing. Like I remember that disturbed me as a kid. And then we get they had like 75 pounds of shaving cream they used.
Oh, is that shaving cream?
It was all shaving cream. In fact, you know that shot where Walter Peck's walking around, he looks up and all this fucking shaving cream drops on him? Mm-hmm. They didn't tell him they were going to do that. They just fucking did it. And I think he got kind of hurt because it was a lot of shaving cream, which is great.
That was shaving cream?
I'm gonna say this right now. I find that hard to believe.
He didn't know that he was going to get dumped on. They didn't tell him. And then
what did they tell him the scene was?
I don't know.
Look around?
Look around. And then they're just... Also, Ruggs, Bernie Wrightson helped do some of these ghost designs.
Oh, great. Yeah. Great artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did they...
great monster designer.
Do you guys have any... I'm sure Imran did all the research, but how did they do the ghosts?
So the guy in charge of effects had left ILM to start his own business. The studio gave him $5 million to start a new business and do this movie. He had previously worked on Poltergeist. So a lot of the ghosts look similar to Poltergeist. Those were all like puppets that they made. Mm-hmm. And it was just like a composited transparent shot. But if you want, and then some of it is early animation effects on the film. But it's a lot like what they did in Poltergeist with the ghosts flying around. Which ghost in particular? Because a lot of that are like puppets that they shot. And then
some of the ghosts are humans.
Like the, which ones?
Like the lady in the library.
The lady in the library. Oh, they were, they floated somebody, I think they said. And then when she turns into like the ghost thing, that was like a maquette, a puppet that they made. So it was.
What about all those fucking cards flying out of the card catalog?
That was an air gun underneath, I believe, and the books were floating on wires, but they had like air pressure hoses. And then they had to reset that shit every time to shoot another take. And I was like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, somebody has to put all this back in order. This is a fucking mess.
Even the grocery part was pretty cool.
Yeah, the eggs popping in front. That was all camera. Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing that was crossing my mind is going, oh, these are all, not all of it, obviously, but a lot of this stuff was practical effects.
Yeah, the demon dogs was like puppet work that was comped in, which it looks, you could see like the outline around there and the little stuff.
Yeah, a little sketchy.
Yeah, it's a little rough.
But they sculpted a lot of those for the close-ups. And then, some of it still holds up. Also, you notice at the end, this is the funniest thing, huge explosion at the end. The whole top of the building blows off.
They survive.
They're all fine.
Yeah, they're all fine. I noticed that right
away. It's hilarious. It's so funny.
Gigantic explosion.
Yeah. other favorite lines of mine from Venkman in the beginning where he's just like, back off, man. I'm a scientist. That's pretty funny. When he says this chick is toast is great. That's iconic. And then the line I always remember is when he's just like, let's show this prehistoric bitch how we do things downtown. I was like 9 years old. I'm like, that's the fucking most badass line I've ever heard in my life. It's like my favorite line in the whole movie. Next to.
I like the scene where they arrive to the and there's a crowd there and he's talking to the crowd. Oh, yeah.
Doing crowd
he's
work.
Just making like he's just saying these like, yeah, we're gonna kick its butt, yeah, we got this, don't worry.
It's so great. They're like politicians, almost. They're like celebrity politician actors. It's great how they become a thing.
I don't know why
something
but
about
I,
that was nice.
Yeah,
I love that. That scene too when they arrive, and I love when they, I don't know why, it's funny to me, but you got the priests, the Catholic priests praying, and then you cut to the Jewish rabbis just like swaying back and forth. I always laugh at that.
All the religious denominations are there praying for the Ghostbusters.
And like the signs that are holding up, they're holding up are clearly printed like by like a professional printer. Like, they don't look hand drawn at all.
No, but then you cut to the roof and they always cut back to the long shots and everything's, that's definitely hand drawn paintings.
Yeah.
Of the New York skyline.
Yeah. And then the sky and the special effects. Classic 80s shit. Roger Ebert gave this 3.5 stars back in 1984. It's not too shabby.
Also, I think it still holds up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you also got to love an end credits where the movie's still going.
Oh, I love that.
And they
yes.
just have the end credits going while the movie's still happening.
That's when you get the kiss, the Venkman and Dana kiss and the crowd.
He gets the girl and there's no reason.
He's an asshole. He fell for the asshole.
He has no reason to get her.
I also thought it was very like Batman if you think about it. They got like a Batcave. There's a pole. It's Batmobile. I love the Ecto-1. Just like the logo is fucking iconic. What a fucking
the firehouse that they get. I loved. I didn't catch this when I was a kid, but I love that Venkman and Spengler are basically trying to like negotiate it down. They're like, this place sucks.
Yeah,
there's nothing. There's nothing good about it. And then Ray is just like, I love this place. We should buy it. And they're like, fuck.
I know.
All right, okay.
He's like, when
you
do
just
we move
ruined
in?
The negotiation.
I know. He's like, I guess we'll take it. But, and if you notice, Ray says he had to get a third mortgage on his house to fucking pay for this fucking thing.
Oh, yeah.
Which I forgot about that.
Did you notice before they do, I saw this, I noticed it during the film and then someone pointed out on Letterboxd. But before they go after their first ghost or the one at the hotel, Slimer. They're all eating Chinese food.
Yeah.
They don't have any more food money left.
Yeah.
Bill Murray and I believe Venkman and Ray Stantz are both drinking like a Miller Lite or something, or like a Bud Light.
Yeah.
And Spangler's drinking, Egon's drinking a Coke.
Yeah.
And someone pointed out that, like, it's very possible that two of the three Ghostbusters showed up like Rug Boy does to our podcast.
We're actually drunk.
Super buzzed.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Trying to catch this ghost.
Absolutely.
That's the only way to do it. You got to have a couple of drinks before you try and do fucking battle with ghosts.
You got dangerous shit on your back.
Sober.
It's fantastic.
I think the line was that it's very possible that every time they go on missions, half of them are at least buzzed.
They're drunk driving the fucking.
We haven't spoken about Janine.
Oh, yeah. Janine Melnitz is great. So, Ghostbusters.
So Egon ends up getting hooked up with Janine, yeah, right? Yeah. Is that what happens?
That's what they're implying, right? That she likes him.
Yes. Yeah.
But he doesn't even notice.
Because they're both like nerdy.
Do they hook up in the second movie? Does she hook up with somebody else in the second movie? Janine.
I don't remember. I thought in the second movie she ends up with Rick Moranis' character.
That's what I thought. That's what what I thought too just now, that they were a pair.
I think they dropped that, but it was definitely a thing in this one where she's really into Spangler.
She's drawn to, like, he's smart and quiet and shy, like kind of the same person. And I feel like in the cartoon, Janine was also like always trying to get with Egon, or they were a couple.
Yeah, it's weird that they went from Rick Moranis in the second one.
There was a line that she has in it that I wrote down. It's not like super great, but she's complaining about how much she's not getting paid and how many hours she's working. And she just goes, I've quit better jobs than this.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
I like when she's on the phone. She's, what kind of ghost is it? Was it like some kind of mist? What was it? Did it have arms? Did it have legs?
She always gonna ask, does it have limbs? Just floating ghost. But that whole moment where they get their first call and she's like, we got one, and hits the bell. Like, it's fucking great.
She's like, they do. And yes. And there was a moment with Venkman where he called her bug eyes, and then like a couple seconds, he's like, I'm sorry about the bug eyes.
Yes. He has a lot of little lines here and there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie that shouldn't work, but for whatever reason, it's just a very charming, funny movie.
Did you know also Dan Aykroyd is really into the paranormal? His grandfather would like built a machine that could communicate with radio waves, and like his mom had seen ghosts. He's always been into ghosts.
Well, I don't know if I might be wrong on this, but had we seen any sort of combination of a supernatural horror type thing, but put into a comedy blockbuster?
No, that's why I think this thing was huge, because he was inspired by movies like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, wanted to make a modern comedic ghost film, a genre of which really didn't exist, I don't think.
No, there's
not
think
on
there
this
were.
Scale. Yeah. Look, they weren't the first people to do it, but not on this scale, not with a franchise power that it has. I think it was bigger than they ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah, 100%. It became a monster hit. And you're right, Anthony. It was all just a matter of these certain pieces falling into place. Like, it's the combination of the music, the logo, the cast, the effects. Like, all these things just kind of happened perfectly for this at this one time. Even though it was, they had 13 months to fucking write and shoot and finish this movie. And Ivan Reitman's like shooting and editing at the same time. It was a crazy production from what I read.
Look at this. I'm reading right now that some of the other people that were considered for
Let's get alternate cast. Yes.
You mentioned some people already, but some of the other people considered for Murray's role were Michael Keaton, Chevy Chase, Tom Hanks, Robin Williams, Steve Guttenberg, and Richard Pryor. And then people considered for Egon, Ruggs, you'll love this, Christopher Walken.
Yes.
Oh,
John Lithgow, Christopher Lloyd, and Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, this whole cast could have been wildly different.
It could have been so many iterations.
Yeah,
and I probably would have liked a lot of them.
They might have all worked. I mean, these are, and then there was I forgot they had different people. Oh, I heard the story about Sigourney Weaver. They had a bunch of actresses lined up, but when she auditioned, she like got on all fours and acted like a dog. And that impressed Ivan Reitman that she was so crazy. And she gets the role. And, like, nobody had seen her do comedic stuff, right? They only knew her from, like, Alien.
Right.
But she's great at the kind of, she can fit in the comedy.
So when they make the next Ghostbusters.
Part two you're talking about?
Yeah. Maybe they spent so much. It did $215 million.
No.
Okay.
And compared to $282 million, which was Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that little drop, I guess that $50 million
unless
drop
they
or whatever.
Spent more on it, right? Maybe.
Was enough to kill the whole thing?
Well, I think Bill Murray, after that, did not enjoy the experience from what I read, and he was an inhibitor to me ever making a three. And then shortly after him and what's his face? Harold Ramis had a falling out during the filming of Groundhog Day. So they didn't speak to each other until what's his name was on his deathbed, Ramis.
Wow. I know I've heard Murray is notoriously sometimes hard to work with and just do whatever he wants. But they had so many extra alternate takes of this movie is that when they showed the TV version, there was whole for like the lines that couldn't make the TV instead of censoring it or bleeping it. They had whole alternate takes of these lines and they weren't as good, but they were clean. So it was almost like watching another movie. Oh, there's also an infamously bad Atari 2600 game. I remember it. It was not very good that they rushed out for this, but man, the toys live on. The cartoon lives on. There was the Extreme Ghostbusters, and they're still making Ghostbusters. And
they made comic books.
Books were great. From Now Comics had a bunch of comic books.
This franchise still, we're literally getting a movie this week for it.
With fucking Bill Murray and Ernie Hudson. And Aykroyd's
in it too.
Aykroyd and Janine is in it also. They just got to get Rick Moranis.
They're trying to transfer past the baton to the younger crew now.
I don't know how this second one's going to be. Again, like I said, no early reviews. Makes me nervous. The first one was okay. I like that they're returning to New York because it's a very New York thing, Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be in New York. It makes me think of New York. The firehouse is like a real place you could go to, Hook and Ladder Company 8 in Tribeca. But fuck, it's great. It's great. And all the possibilities that could have happened is wild behind the scenes. All right, let's rate it and rank it. Enough gushing about who hasn't seen the Ghostbusters. Come on. Anthony, what are you going to give it? Rate it.
Before I saw the film again yesterday, I had it as one of my all-time favorites, 9 out of 10. It's still an all-time favorite because anything you watch as a kid and that sticks with you is always going to have that place in my heart. And I think it's still a very charming, good film. I don't have it ranked as high because of the things I said before. Mm-hmm. I have it as an 8 out of 10 now.
Okay.
It really is just an adventure. But it's nothing deeper than that. And the lead is just, it's just so funny that this is the lead. Like it's Venkman's movie at the end of the day. And, I couldn't get over the opening scene. He wants to fuck his own student. It's just, it's such a weird thing to introduce.
What a great role model for kids to watch.
The '80s were a great time.
Yeah. And these schlubs became icons for all this stuff. Bill Murray, 34 years old. Keep that in mind. When you watch this movie again, look at that fucking face and think, God, that's 34 years old.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but fun movie. I still laughed. I had a great time. It's fun rewatching, going back and watching something from its time like that. And I'm glad the franchise, we're 40 years later, exactly 40 years, and it's still alive, still kicking. It's a all-time movie. It's still one of my all-time favorite comedies and adventures and franchises. So there you go. Right. Lightning in a bottle, like I said earlier. You literally could not make that movie today.
No.
And it become the hit it became.
Right? Isn't that weird? Yeah. That's a good point. Rugs, what are you going to give?
Before I give it a number, it's an 80s classic. And the 80s were a crazy time. Fucking, you could do crazy shit. And you could have the main character be a sleazy dude. And that was just part of no one would bat an eyelash because it was a different time. It was just, more ignorant time. I don't know. I guess it's interesting that this has survived for so many years in the hearts of so many people that love it way more than I do. I like Ghostbusters. Don't get me wrong, but this is a lot of people's like like childhood movie that like defines their childhood. Yeah. It's not that much for me because I had other stuff, I had interest. I was more into like, you know, action heroes and superheroes and monsters and stuff like that. So it had something like that for me. I liked effects, special effects a lot.
Yeah.
But I think that the, one of the great things in, that happened in the 80s is they figured out how to make blockbuster movies.
Yes, and this was one of the first ones.
And this, and like these were like some of the first ones that were really like a big event. You go, you watch Gremlins, there's Karate Kid, like movies like the whole family can enjoy and just watch over and over again. And this is one of them. So I'm going to give it a 7.5.
Oh, shit.
And, I think it's a classic and I think it's a great movie. And I think some people can easily give it a 10 and I have no, you know, it's just for me, I laugh a lot throughout this movie. I think it's a funny movie and I think it's a little bit weak on the science, a little bit weak on the story enough to really the characters. I have to like go back and like watch other videos to learn more about why Peter Venkman can have two PhDs. Like, I don't know that. How do these particle accelerators work? Do they work? Does that even make any sense? Can you use particle accelerators to get ghosts? Is that even scientifically?
I wanted a fucking PKE meter, the handheld thing. I always wanted one of those.
Like, so there's a lot of things that when you look at it from a perspective of what we would hold movies today accountable for, like you have no excuse to make shitty like sci-fi movies because you have access to all this knowledge and it's right at your fingertips, right? So I'm kind of holding it to that standard.
Look, what you just said, how it defines some people's childhood, that I think that applies to me here because it's hard to judge this objectively. This did define my childhood. I remember drawing Slimer, drawing the logo, making the costume, watching this over and over again, watching the cartoon in the afternoons. It's a fucking all-timer classic with lines that I was reciting as a little boy. I'm going to give it a 9.5. I'm going to go 9.5. Almost fucking perfect, like Back to the Future or the other movies of the time. I love everything. It's, you know, it's hard to think of a time when there wasn't Ghostbusters. It's my life, anyways. It's fucking, it's all time. It's iconic.
It's still a good watch. It still holds up. It's still a good watch.
I mean, it's all high on the list of like best comedies all time.
It moves pretty quick.
Yeah.
It's entertaining throughout. You know, I agree. It's still, I didn't watch this and go, wow, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I was stupid as a kid.
Yeah. You're embarrassed that you liked it. No, yeah. I was like, wow, this is, it's still fun to watch this. I'm still into it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And just the pop culture phenomenon, 40 years, can't be denied. All right. At some point, we might get to Ghostbusters Frozen Empire if it's good. We'll see what the reviews say. For now, I'm going to do some news from the nation.
It's time for news from the nation.
It's time for news from the nation.
It stinks. It stinks. It stinks.
Oh, I missed that fart. I missed that sound last week. I just got a couple of comments about that Crow trailer we discussed. What did our listeners think in the group? Well, Steve Morrison says, I'm all for revenge hyperviolent movies, but this doesn't look good. The original should be left alone. If you are going to remake it, keep it comic accurate, which hasn't been done yet. All right. Blake Braden says he will try to keep an open mind. That's a good thing to do. I think we're going to need that going into this. David Rozelle says looks more like the Joker than the Crow. Yes. And then Jay Ness Rhyme says waiting this long to officially release something, especially so close to its release date. Now, less than 3 months, it's a definite sign it's trash, and they aren't really confident in this film. Plus, now, the fact that Chicago obviously used as a set piece also at some point, because that shot with the two trains, obviously here in Chicago. I did notice that. It did look like the Chicago L, so I wonder if it's set in Chicago?
Maybe Detroit.
Where is it, Detroit? I wonder if it's set in Chicago. So, yeah, nobody really vibing on this Crow movie. Fantastic. Let's finish with some What Are We Watching, Anthony?
Yes.
You watching anything?
Well, it's March Madness, so I've been watching a lot of college basketball.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
How's your bracket? I don't know.
Well, no, you don't. You're asking a Okay. Bad question, because the tournament hasn't started yet.
Oh well, that would make a difference, I guess. Yeah.
There was a lot of college basketball tournaments leading up to this.
So. Oh, I see. Okay.
Other tournaments leading up to the main tournament. Anyways, I have though listened to about half of the Roadhouse rewatchables, which is really good.
Isn't that great? That's a fun one.
Yeah, it's fun. Reminds me of when we talked about Roadhouse.
Definitely, I'm going to rewatch that movie before the next week. I'll talk about.
Oh, I got to watch that again too.
Rex, I used to fuck guys like you in prison.
Let me ask you. Did we go over this? That line. I used to fuck guys like you in prison. Compliment or insult? I'm not sure. It's like both.
I think it could be a little bit of both.
It's like both.
I don't think it's really I don't think it's either. I think it's just like. I think it's more of an insult. He's just basically saying.
He's threatening him.
Yeah, he's saying you're nothing to me.
But I guess. Or
yeah, people are my bitch.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
I've made guys like you my bitch.
Yeah. Or he loves him so much.
Well, they quoted, that's definitely right. They quoted in the podcast, Mike Tyson one time said, I'm going to fuck you till you love me.
Oh, that's a great line. That's a great Mike Tyson line. My other favorite Mike Tyson is, I'm going to eat your children, all praise due to Allah. That's a great line.
I'm going to eat your harp, all praise, yeah. All
I'm
praise
going,
the Lord.
I'm going to pound you into Bolivian.
Yeah, pound you into a Bolivian.
That's a great line.
Yeah, you're gonna be Bolivian. You're gonna move to South America immediately.
Rugs, you watched a bunch of things. What'd you watch?
I did.
What'd you watch?
Oh, okay. I watched Aquaman 2.
It is on the max, yes.
And it was really bad. It was really, really, really bad. And they poured a lot of money into that movie, yeah. But it was really bad. It was just wow. It was a joke of a movie.
I forget what even happened in that movie. I just watched it.
But I was entertained to a degree, but like, I'm also knowing full well I'm watching a terrible movie, but I watch terrible movies all the time.
Sure.
So I watched that. I'm glad I didn't have to review it because I had nothing really to add to what you guys said.
All right.
I watched the new Invincible.
Yes, Invincible Part 2, Season 2, Part 2 has begun.
It's an hour-long episode.
Yeah, Episode 5. So they're going to come out. I don't know how many episodes there are. 8 in the next few weeks. Anthony, are you going to wait till it all comes out to watch them?
He's muted.
Oh. You're like, I'm going to fuck off.
I think he fucked up. Anyways, yes, episode 5. I also watched this. I don't want to spoil it for Anthony, but what'd you think overall?
I liked it. Yeah. I think it's good. Sets up what's going to happen. There's a lot of new things at play. And there was some surprising deaths.
Holy shit. Well, that's it. Yeah, you just spoiled it. Anthony, what are you going to? It was fucking violent and shocking. Yes, amazing episode 5. Anthony, you going to wait till they all come out, this Invincible?
No, I watched episode 5.
You did watch episode 5. When I asked you, what have you watched, you didn't mention that.
I forgot.
Okay, what did you think of that episode? I already gave the spoiler alert.
I liked it. Yeah, I liked it. I mean, they set up a lot of things. You've got the Martian horde or whatever the hell that is coming to Earth.
Yeah.
You've got the his brother now living on Earth. They killed a lot of the heroes.
Holy
some of the
shit.
Heroes.
Yes, the deaths.
With the lizards. I mean, there's
Serpent Society. Just, yeah.
Yeah.
And the cliffhangers. Two cliffhangers.
Yeah, there's some good cliffhangers that, you know.
Alan the Alien post-credit scene was great.
Yeah, Alan the Alien's back. And you find out that you originally thought that Optimus Prime was a bad Viltrumite, but apparently he's a good Viltrumite.
Yes,
and he wants to take down the Viltrumite Empire.
Well, was he good though? Because he told him, I turned off your life support. I thought you were either going to die or you're going to come back stronger. I did take a gamble a little bit.
Right.
But the gamble paid off and Alan is back and he's jacked.
Alan, and then he wants to see, find what's his name? Invincible.
Oh, right. He needs him to help him stop. Yeah, so him bringing his brother back is fantastic, but like the whole thing at the end where he's in space with the squid Martians, and it's all that one Martian shapeshifter's fault that this is happening is hilarious. Meanwhile, I love Rex is like, we're just going to chill out and watch TV. He doesn't think anything's going to happen.
They go fight for their
holy
life.
Holy shit, and the fucking multiplication girl and the shrinky girl both die really gruesome deaths. That was fucking, I did not expect that. We smashed them together.
The one dude, that she goes inside his brain and he just like muscles his body in like,
yeah, because he
overcome her expanding inside of him.
Because he ate her first, right? And then she was trying to expand. And then the other guy who was just ripping the multiplication girl, throwing many copies of herself. They're all getting ripped limb from limb. And he finally just smashes two together. And one of them was real. And like, it was very graphic. There's all the blood. Yeah. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, it was pretty high stakes.
Rex was going to die too, but I guess he's the only one that survives.
Well, did he survive?
He got cut up really bad. I can't remember if he survived or died, but. And then what's happening?
Left it open.
What's happening on the ship? They're also like, they can't stop this thing.
Oh,
it's
taking
them over.
What's the pink girl's name?
Oh, Eve. Adam Eve is trying to hold
her
back.
Her shield is basically broken.
It's cracking, right.
And they're about to get swarmed.
They are fucked. So I was like, wow. That's great. It's great. All right. What else do you watch, Rex?
I watched two different girl boss movies.
Oh, yeah?
One was Millie Bobby Brown's Damsel on Netflix.
I watched that last night as well.
Which is all right. It's all right.
It was okay. The CG is kind of iffy. Like when there's people with her, the story is very predictable.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like a dragon girl has to fight dragon movie. But
yeah,
I don't know. Parts of it, the story was kind of, some of it made me laugh, some of the deaths, and there's a point where the mom just pops up when she's looking for her. I'm like, how the fuck did you get there? Weren't you just in the castle, and aren't you also stabbed?
Yeah, aren't you supposed to be dead?
And then she's in the middle of nowhere, and you just fucking found her.
But yeah, I watched it. It was like a little long. It felt long.
It took forever to get going, right? And
yeah.
So in the movie, she falls down a hole, has to run away from a dragon, comes out, and then just goes through the whole thing again. Which I thought was silly and unnecessary.
She goes back in there. It was a weird movie, but I was like, all right, it's got a dragon in it. If you like dragons, I guess you can watch the movie. It's not great.
It's all right.
It's not good.
It's all right.
It's
you know
right.
What they should have done? Right away, I was like, tell the fucking dragon these people are lying to you and go get them and then introduce another fucking thing. And that would have been better. And they do the thing where they wait to reveal the important information until the end, the thing that the audience knows, and you're just like, just tell the dragon this. What the fuck are you waiting for? And she never does until the end.
It's like all those people that lived in that city got destroyed.
Yeah.
By the dragon.
It's all right.
Okay. It was weird. It was just a weird, it was just a strange movie, but you could tell they spent a lot of money more money than you would think on a Netflix movie with Millie Bobby Brown in it.
She's their like go-to, right? She's got the Enola Holmes series, Stranger Things, this direct to Netflix. Like, they love her. She loves them.
Yeah, I guess. She's backing up the truck there, getting paid.
All right, what else did you see? This other thing
I watched,
about.
The next girl boss movie I watched was Poor Things, Oscar winner.
Oh,
what'd you think of that?
It's a Yorgos Lanthimos film.
That's on Hulu.
It's on Hulu. It's almost 3 hours long. I really like this movie.
Really?
I like it a lot. It's a weird movie. It's not easily digestible at all. The performances are great. It's kind of like if, I don't know, it's like Tim Burton plus Wes Anderson had a child, and this is the child, and like Guillermo del Toro in there too.
Whoa.
It's all in there. It's basically like a Frankenstein story of a woman that was created, and she has to kind of go through life and figure out what's going on. And she'd stay create her born, and you know, she's essentially a grown up child almost, you know, and she has to kind of deal with life and discovering her sexuality and what that is. And a lot of this stuff that you would wrestle with when you're growing up, but it's at an accelerated pace.
Huh.
And there's all these different men that are in her life and that are manipulating her or want something from her, want to bang her, like all these different take advantage of her. And it's just the way that she kind of manages her way around that. It is a very feminist film. It's pretty woke. It's very feminist. It's basically like every man is, except for her dad, and even her dad's a piece of shit. There's like no good men. There's like one good man in the whole film.
Yeah, okay.
Like everybody's a piece of shit. But
I gotta check this out. I'm gonna watch it.
I've heard really good things about this movie.
Looks
but
trippy.
It is. Remember that movie where the girl, what was it called, The Promising Young Woman?
Yeah.
Where like it's kind of like very against. It's about the woman's experience and not. Yeah, it's kind of like a similar viewpoint, but very much of a black comedy instead.
Okay. She's working.
And you get to see what's her name's boobies,
Emma Stone.
Oh yeah, she's revealing a lot. Yeah. In this movie.
That's when you get. That's how you get the Oscar. That's like,
yeah, you got.
She's making another movie that's coming out this summer. Yorgos Lanthimos and Emma Stone's in it, and I think some other people from that movie are in this movie. So maybe she's going for another Oscar back to back with the same guy. They must like working together. But
he is an interesting. You know what? There is some. I want to watch it again one day, but like it's a long ass movie. I don't know if I'm ready to do that. But like there are some. William Dafoe is amazing in it.
Nice.
He's great. His character, like just the characters that they make, are very memorable. Yeah. The Hulk is in it.
Oh yeah,
Ruffalo, right? Yeah,
yeah, and he's very memorable in it. And he has some great scenes. There's a lot. There's a lot of interesting shit going on in here. A lot to like. A lot to take in, and there's also some wacky shit in here. There's like. Wacky science shit, wacky kind of gory shit. It's all in there.
Yeah, I'm gonna check.
So I would recommend if you're
all right. Wow,
if you're up for it. I mean, it's not for everyone.
It's a rare rug boy recommendation, there, Anthony. Wow. Right?
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think this is definitely an Oscar-worthy film. I mean, it's not like the kind of typical Oscar-worthy movie. It's not like a World War II epic that's like gritty and blah blah blah. This is like a weird. Art piece.
Artsy. I kind of dig it. I'm going to check it out. That's on Hulu. The other thing on Hulu that I started watching, I did not know this was coming out, season 2 of this show, Extraordinary or Extraordinary. I don't know how you...
What's that?
Remember, it's a British superhero comedy, half-hour episodes of a world where everybody gets their powers at puberty. The lead is this girl who's 25, has not gotten her powers, and she's got to navigate this world. She's trying to figure out why. The first season was really funny. I've watched the first couple of episodes of the second season. Still really funny. You know, it's got the guy whose power is his ass is a 3D printer. There's a character named Jizz Lord in there. So some messed up things happen. It's a lot of fun. It's really funny. So I've been watching that. Out this week, though, not only you got Ghostbusters Frozen Empire the Friday, not only you got the movie we're reviewing next week, Roadhouse. March 22nd. I think that's sitting at like a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. But X-Men 97 will be out the day this show comes out on Disney Plus.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's all the episodes or just one episode. But what I do know is last week they fired the showrunner.
I saw that.
That has been working on the show for a while and has had ideas for like season 2 and 3. Apparently for like a weird OnlyFans account. That's what I heard. I don't know. The whole thing was weird.
I just really.
Yeah. I don't know if that. It's a bit.
What are we doing?
The whole story is strange. But anyways, I'm looking forward to that.
Was he looking at stuff or was
no, he? No, he was posting things. Some innocent and some maybe it says unsettling, creepy quote. OnlyFans activity. I don't know. Maybe that's why. But it was a mysterious sudden firing right before like the premiere of the thing. I went and I watched the first episode of the show. It's like rough 90s animation. It's very choppy. I forgot about that. But still cool. Brought me back to being a kid. But that should be fun. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about Roadhouse next week, right? That's what we're going to do.
And Ghostbusters, the new one, we'll do a little bit later.
We'll do in a couple weeks because there's like
Godzilla. I gotta watch X-Men. You fuck.
Maybe. Well, you don't have to talk about that. You can. Is it gonna be?
You can talk. You guys can watch it and tell me.
We got Godzilla X Kong coming up. Monkey Man's coming out. What else?
A lot coming out in March.
Yeah, in late March and April. April there. Oh, that Civil War movie looks amazing with this new trailer. I think I might have to go see that.
I saw a tweet the other day. Was it a tweet or Instagram post where someone was like, I saw the Civil War movie, the remake of Civil War. They totally missed the mark.
Yes.
No, there's definitely no Tony Stark or Steve Rogers.
I can't wait to see Iron Man.
No superheroes whatsoever. No? Yeah. Totally missed the mark.
Imagine little kids show up and they think it's the wrong fucking Civil War and their popcorn and they're just traumatized. No.
Imagine it's old white dudes. They think it's supposed to be about the Civil War. The
comic book guy is like worst superhero movie ever.
They go, the only thing they got right was the casting of Kirsten Dunst. At least that was kind of a throwback to superhero movies.
Mary Jane is in this movie taking pictures with the guy from Parks and Rec. So anyways, yes, lots of stuff in coming up. Anyways, that's it. Rugs, where can the listener find you online?
You can find me at Rugboy Show. Right?
That's where he is. That's on X.
You can find me at Rugboy Show. And he trails off, right?
Right? Yes. I think that's the correct answer.
I think it's Rugboy Show. Yeah.
Anthony, where can the listener find you?
This weekend, I'll be in Las Vegas. Find me on passed out on a park bench.
Anthony.
Always bet on black.
Anthony will be on top of the sphere.
Some motherfuckers are always trying to ice skate uphill.
Snipes, I have.
Wesley's, it's up him at the bet on black part instead. Yeah,
I don't have that
part. Yeah.
Just think of it.
That's imagine, another Wesley Snipes said it like
that. Yeah, imagine he said that instead. In the meantime, share this show, listener, with your friends, your peers, your enemies, your friends. I already said friends. Thank you for listening to the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's the nerd.
We'll peep you next time.
I fucking loved it.
I really don't give a shit.
I'm pumped.
Yeah, me too.
Thing I offered you a chance to be a cop, and you blew it!
And you blew it!